WWNR Beckley. The opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of News Talk 620 WWNR.
Tonight, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they're working for you. Now, Bob Kincaid.
Hey, good evening. Almost 6 minutes after 7 o'clock on this Friday night, the fourth day of March 2005. So far, so good. Rather a decent little night out there. No snow flying. Not particularly frozen. Glad to be with you. Sort of one of those drat. It's Friday. 2 days without you guys. And, I'm not pulling your leg when I say that. This is probably the only job I've ever had where I would almost be willing to go at it 7 days a week. Because it's fun. It's conversation. And for the most part, good conversation. Now, do you remember, I think I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I mentioned it a few more times. My idea for what we're calling, for lack of a better title, Benji's Law. Benji's Law, a law that says that if you're going to make recorded telephone calls into West Virginians' homes, to which the West Virginians have not already consented, and owning a telephone and having a number does not indicate consent. Benji's Law. If you're going to make those recorded phone calls for political purposes, you had better, and this is what I want the law to say, it has to, the number that the call is coming from has to show up on your caller ID. And at the end of the message, there has to be some means of contacting the initiator of the call. I know this sounds like gobbledygook, but there has to be some means of contacting the initiator of the call to demand, by which you can demand, that you not receive any more of them. Do you remember me talking about that? I'm pretty sure you do. And I think it's a good idea. I've even had occasion to pull a couple of legislators over and toss the idea out to them, and I got some nodding heads out of it. You know, when you get a delegate or a senator to kind of give you the little Mr. Ed head nod, you know, it's a start. And I mention this because in talking about this, I was referencing the barrage of invasions of my family's home via telephone calls during the November election cycle from that consummate sleazebag Don Blankenship, as he succeeded in buying himself a Supreme Court seat. Actually, it's his second Supreme Court seat if you count Uncle Spikey. And I didn't appreciate it, but at the time we were talking about it, I said, this is neither a Democrat nor a Republican issue. This is a West Virginia home issue. This is something that I would like to see for everyone who lives in West Virginia, because our homes are our castles. And we have a right to be safe and secure in them. Do you remember that? Perhaps you do. And the point in saying that is that the knife, this is a sword with two edges. One of those great big Scottish claymores with edges on both sides. It can hew and it can quit. Okay? Well, looky here. From the great big crocodile tears department. I'm sorry, I'm puddling up already. Congresswoman Shelley Moore. I don't know if I can go on. Congresswoman Shelley Moore says she's being smeared by an automated telephone campaign that claims she supports privatizing Social Security. Oh. Couldn't happen to a nicer gal. You understand what's going on here? That big, sharp, nasty Scottish claymore has swung in one direction, and now, sunshine, it's swinging back. Yeah. The recorded message says privatizing will drastically cut guaranteed benefits. True. Costing the average worker $152,000. True. It also says the deficit would explode by $4.9 trillion, that's trillion with a T, dollars, forcing the U.S. to borrow from foreign bankers to pay for the first 20 years. True. Now, what Arch's daughter is complaining about, what she's complaining about is the fact that they're saying that she is supporting the privatization, or what we like to refer to here at Head On as piratization. Okay? But see, she's a ripe target here. This is no Tony Arbaugh case. This isn't a great big stinking lie like the Tony Arbaugh argument was. This is truth, because this nasty woman who misrepresents, the second district in the Congress, has not come out to stand for West Virginians like you and me. She has not come out and said, President Bush, I may be a member of your party, but I am certainly no lickspittle. Why not? Because she is a lickspittle. She just hasn't figured out a way to tell her West Virginia constituents in the 2nd District that she intends to slip a shiv between their shoulder blades. She hasn't found some gay marriage thingy or Ten Commandments thingy to hide behind, or some way to argue that if we don't piratize Social Security, some liberal's going to come and get your guns. She hasn't figured that out yet. She's still looking for political cover. Right? Right. But she's very upset, Mrs. Moore is, Arch's daughter. She's very upset. She's very, very upset. Because people are out there telling the truth about what's going to happen when we piratize Social Security. Are you ready for a $20 trillion, $4.9 trillion debt over 20 years? I'm not up for that. Every baby born in Raleigh County, every baby born in West Virginia, every baby born in these great United States right now, thanks to George W. Roach Clip, is born with a due and owing outstanding balance of between $36,000 and $42,000. What does the Bush birth tax go up to if Mrs. Moore and her nasty Republican compadres get to add $4.9 trillion to that birth tax? God, I'm glad she's pro-life. Whew. But she's very, very upset that these phone calls are going out there. She doesn't like it at all. It's not fair. You know, she's beginning to sound like Beaker from the Muppets. Yeah, you remember Beaker, don't you, Taylor? Now we're going to put Beaker in the microwave. She's beginning to sound like Beaker.
Me not privatize Social Security.
But the minute she gets political cover to do it, sunshine, you can bet your last dollar of your last Social Security check that she will. Oh, yeah. She'll do it with a smile on her face, too. But it's very easy. We can put an end to this. We can put an end to this. Benji's Law. There's plenty of time left in the legislative session. We can introduce Benji's Law and have an end to all of these violations of the private personal telephone space of West Virginia voters. Now, because some of you despise me, you won't get behind the idea, and that's just because you're a bunch of bullheaded Republicans. If some Republican came up with this idea, you'd be hopping up and down and flapping your little bat wings and picking the little mitts out of each other's hair and munching on them and stuff. Yeah, he's a genius. But it's my idea, so it can't be good. It would work, but it can't be good. So there's that and about 1,000 other things. Synchronicity, or the who knows, the god of irony, hard at work. You know, June 30th, the abandoned mine lands legislation will expire. What's on the front page of the ChazGaz today? A narrow miss, 100-ton boulder nearly flattens George's Creek house coming off of abandoned mine lands. Well, we need to, I'm just curious, what do we need to do about that? Is it okay to keep dropping rocks on West Virginia families? I'm sure Don Blankenship thinks, because, you know, he's a soulless monster, thinks that it was just really cool when that multi-ton rock dropped on little Jeremy Davidson.
Yeah.
No, seriously, it's Friday, and we're not out of material. And we got 2 hours and 45 minutes to cover, so pick a topic. Bring it to the table. Be prepared to defend it. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your phone calls. The phone number, of course, is area code 304-252-6200. If you're outside the local calling area and it might cost you a nickel or two, let us pay the freight. The phone number is 800-620-9967. Of course, we stream live for you every night on the Internet at WWARNewsTalk620.com. And you can go through there, through the portal at that website, to my site at headonradio.com. You can send an email. You can jump in on the message boards and raise a ruckus. And more of you are doing that. So all of that's available to you. We try really hard. Don't forget the archives at the White Rose Society. Every effort is made to make the show available to you whenever you want it. And we appreciate the efforts that are made. This is Head On. I am Bob Kincaid.
Head On.
That catches it, slams it, hangs on the rim, and the Cougars are on a roll.
His sixth three-pointer of the game, and this one's from 11 feet beyond the arc.
The Cougars are national champions.
This is our town. This is our team. It's Mountain State University Cougar basketball, and you can follow all the exciting action on Power Country 105.9 WTNJ. The 2004 NAIA Division I National Champs are looking to go right back. Don't miss a game, home or away. This is Paul Lanscott inviting you to join me for all the exciting action this year of Mountain State University Cougar basketball on 105.9 WTNJ. Your MacArthur Walmart store will be opening soon, and Walmart is hiring. Join the world's best retailing team, recognized by Fortune Magazine as the most admired company in the world. As a member of the Walmart team, you'll receive competitive wages and enjoy benefits including merchandise discounts, 401k, stock purchase plan, profit sharing, health benefits, and career advancement opportunities. Just come by Walmart's hiring center located at 158 Dye Drive in the Harbor Industrial Park weekdays between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. or call 252-2138. Walmart, an equal opportunity employer.
Shining a liberal light in the conservative darkness. Bob Kincaid, Head On.
Welcome back. Almost 19 minutes after 7 o'clock here in beautiful uptown Beckley. The last gasps of winter crossing the land. Keep your fingers crossed, at least. Son, you need to be in the chair. My boy's with me tonight. It was one of those Friday night, yeah, let's hang out with Dad kind of things. No, in the chair, sitting like a young man, please. Did you hear that? Okay. We're still working on yes, sir, sometimes. Really, I've been following the abandoned mine lands issue. Do you get the chance, Gaz? It's a real newspaper. Can you imagine living in the circumstances that the Lucas family lived in? They bought a home. And, you know, when you buy a house, you do a title search and yada, yada, yada. And they had no idea that there were ancient mines, including the openings to mines, practically on top of them. 9:15 p.m., Wednesday night, a 100-ton boulder crashed down into their driveway. How would you like that? Is this a case of NIMBY? Eh, not in my backyard. This wasn't in their backyard. It was in their front yard. And there's an open question as to whether they'll ever be able to live in their home again. But, of course, they're on the hook for the mortgage. What do you think? Do you think are the Republicans right? These good, godly, upstanding, family values Republicans in Congress, are they right when they think, nah, who needs the abandoned mine lands program? You know, coal companies have to pay into that. That bites into their profits. We can't bite into a coal company's profits. Because, you see, that really, you know, they can talk about how Christian they are, and we know it's a lie. But what congressional Republicans are really about, and, you know, it doesn't take long to figure this out, what they're about is worshiping mammon, money, 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 money. You know, they've got a 9-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son, the Lucas family does. And Big Coal came within a hair's breadth of slaughtering them. When are we going to contemplate the true cost of coal? When? What do you think? Shall we let the abandoned mine lands legislation just expire and leave the Lucases flapping in the wind? What do you think? Let's go to the phones. Jim has joined us. Jim, you're head on. I'm great. Yourself? Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a little lengthy.
No, I'm not trying to be a sycophant, but I pretty much agree with everything you say, because you can back up what you say and what you said about shedding more capital. Oh, well, I don't think the apples can fall too far from the tree.
Or the nut, or the acorn from the, you know, the nut from the nut tree.
You know, I heard about him in South Carolina back in the 20 years ago.
Well, you know, I mean, Arch is one of your classic crooks. He's an arch criminal. Ba-dum-bum. There I go, bringing the A material.
But, you know, I would hear from people who have moved from Huntington to Columbia, and they would, I mean, this guy was legendary, and the audacity that he went with, I mean, he just was like Captain Kidd.
Oh, yeah, drawn with a broad brush. But, you know, I'm really sincere about this, Jim. This idea of Benji's Law.
Now, what is that exactly?
Well, no, you remember the do not call list?
Oh, yeah,
for
sure.
Telemarketers?
Absolutely.
Why can't we in West Virginia have our own little West Virginia do not call list for pre-recorded political ads?
Oh, I think this should be. As a matter of fact, the Republican people call me back before November 3rd.
And oh, right, and that's why I call it Benji's Law for Brent Blankenship or Brent Benjamin, whatever the stinking crook's name is. But, you know, a man's home is his castle, right?
Exactly.
And I don't care if you're at the gates with spears and swords, or if you're ringing the phone and invading the privacy of my dinner or my homework time with my kids, or maybe I'm just busy doing the dishes. I don't need to be interrupted by some politician.
No, I don't either. I don't like to be interrupted by anybody unless I want to be called, and I certainly don't want to be solicited
and
by
see
people
what,
like that.
And see, what most people don't understand is the do not call list, well, you know, that applies to business.
But not them.
But it specifically does not apply to politicians.
Well, you know, they did call me, and I did receive some literature. As a matter of fact, I have received this big 8x10 or 8x11 glossy of George and Laura Lou. And after I committed it to the Scylla and Charybdis in my bathroom, it had an 800 number on there. No, it was a poll number, but, you know, I can make the calls. I pay a certain amount of months, so like, you can go out and call anywhere.
Right.
And I can guarantee you one thing, they'll never send anything like that to this house. I told the woman who answered the phone, I said, I do not appreciate getting this type of pornography in the mail.
Good man, Jim. Good man.
I did. And she said, well, who are you? And I told her exactly who I was. And I said, you know, I said, I'm not scared of any of you people. I said, you can't do a damn thing to me.
That's right.
I said, you don't send this trash to this house.
So, you know, like I said, we got plenty of time left in the legislative session, Jim. Would it maybe be a good idea for a few of us to make a call to our elected representatives and say, we want Benji's Law right now?
Sure. Who would I call?
Well, call Sally Sussman. Call
Alan. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Alan. Okay.
Call. Yeah, Sally Sussman's there. You could call Virginia Mann for what good it would do. Linda Sumner for what good it would do. But I would suggest a call to Sally Sussman. I for my part, am dropping have dropped a call in to Tom Luisos. You know, Mike Caputo is out front on these consumer West Virginia friendly issues.
All right.
Maybe make a phone call down to Billy Wayne Bailey's office. No sense in making a call to Russ Weeks minded because
he's too stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just amazed that he can breathe out and breathe in again. But you know, people who actually care about consumers, Carrie Webster in Kanawha County, Bonnie Brown in Kanawha County. Let's see.
I'm sure.
Call Bob Kiss, man. If you tell him,
I've talked to Bob before.
If he, you know, if he gets behind it, it'll happen.
Well, I don't mind calling and talking to him. I hope that Sally Sussman. I hope she won't. She will think it's germane to the issue.
Well, I don't
remember that one.
Yeah.
Her germane speech.
Yeah, but I like Sally. You know, Sally was on the right side of the blacklist issue.
Right.
She comes down on the right side of most everything.
Well, I think so too. And I was saying that in a very friendly way, not deprecatingly.
I understand. But you know, let's put this little bug in their ear.
I think you got a good point there. But I'll tell you something else I heard today on the other show, the afternoon show. They had this, you know, economist who's a friend of Dr. O'Brien.
From the Social Security Administration, isn't he?
No, I think this man is an economist, and they've had people from the Social Security Administration on there before, but this man presented, you know, the Social Security situation in a fairly cogent manner, and I was pleased to hear what he had to say, and I think he was trying to illustrate the fact that Social Security is in pretty good shape, but it's not going to be if George Bush has his way. And that was the impression that I got, and I can only listen to bits and pieces of it, but I did call the show and thank him for what he was trying to say, because he was trying to, instead of create a problem, he was trying to eliminate some fear.
Right, because that's, you know, and it's the only modus operandi that the Bush administration has, Jim, is to try to scare people into doing things.
Well, that's no way to live.
No, it's not.
That's no way to govern people.
He managed to scare a bunch of sheeple into voting for him and making him president for four more long years. Everything he's done has been based on fear, and that's what they're doing with Social Security. Oh, it's going broke. It's going broke. You know, I saw him doing that again today. The guy's a shameless liar.
He started out in Indiana. I think he's going to be doing this for 60 days.
Yeah, this is his roadshow, and the sad thing is we're paying him to lie to us. Wow.
Yeah, at $750,000 an hour, that's what his plane costs for him to run around and spread all these lies and stupidity. And that really makes me angry.
You know, one of these days the American people are going to wake up, Jim. I don't know when. It may not be in my lifetime. It may not be in yours.
Oh, I think it probably will, my friend.
I may be, you know, I've got my son here with me tonight. He, you know, it may be his generation that wakes up.
No, I think it'll be yours. I think, you know, I definitely think you'll see this one.
I hope so.
Because, you know, I think by 2008, people are just going to be at the point of, you know, they're going to be ready to storm the Bastille.
Well, you know, I got to thinking about it. Let's see. I don't collect Social Security
And your son doesn't need to be saddled with a $37,000 debt either.
He doesn't
deserve that.
No, he hasn't done anything to deserve that. Neither have my daughters. Neither has any baby. You know, I'm pro-life. I don't want to screw up the lives of babies being born today, tomorrow, or next year. It, you know, but these miserable Republicans are all just hunky-dory for it. You know, let's 36,000. Let's make it 45.
Well, you know, life does not end at birth. It begins at birth. And you want to, if you really are pro-life, in my opinion, you want to see these children come into a world in which they really have an even playing field and a chance to really be all that they can be. But who can do that when they come into this world saddled with a debt like that? And the aura of despair that a debt like that creates. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And just remember, Jim, this is, you know, what we're talking about here is the Bush birth tax. You know,
well,
he likes to talk about ending the inheritance tax as the death tax. This is the Bush birth tax.
You know,
we're taking back the language.
We're going to the bottom of the hour, but I want to say one more thing. This man, more than any other person, to me, is a complete nemesis of hope. He really is.
Yeah, the nemesis of hope, the nemesis of life, the nemesis of truth, the nemesis of decency. He's a monster, Jim. But you're right. We do have to take the break. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Out here, my friend.
All right. Okay, time for a news update from Carl Nack, which probably will include the tragic story of what happened on U.S. 19 last night. I saw that wreck. Ugh. Our hearts, our condolences, our thoughts, and our prayers go out to that family. And I'm sure I do speak for every single human being listening to this program. After that, we'll have an update from the Workers Independent News Service. Then we'll come back. Your phone calls, lots more information, plenty to talk about. The phone number, of course, 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is Carl Mack, WWNR News. The hearing on a controversial annexation by the town of Mabscott has been postponed for another week. The town wants to annex a portion of Bird Drive going through MacArthur and Crab Orchard into city limits. The Raleigh County Commission has refused to approve the annexation, saying maps and petitions the town presented were faulty. Both sides were scheduled to argue their case before Circuit Judge H.L. Kirkpatrick this morning, but Commission Attorney Carl Roop says a dispute has arisen over a map that Mabscott has presented. Roop says a map that the Commission has shows a potential overlap of the annexation area into the town of Sophia, and both sides have agreed to continue the trial to study the matter.
The first thing we're going to do is allow the town of Mabscott surveyor to go back out, have time to let him replot his map, and then we'll get together, the council will, for each of the parties and look at the map. And if there is an overlap of even one inch, then obviously the case will be thrown out or dismissed.
The town of Mabscott wants the court to force the commission to approve the annexation, saying state law does not give them the authority to refuse. The hearing will be held sometime next week on a day to be determined. The Mountain State University basketball team has a new member. He's Governor Joe Manchin, made an honorary Cougar Thursday during a ceremony celebrating the team's 2004 NAIA National Championship. The governor, a former quarterback for the WVU football team, was presented an MSU jersey with his name on it. In a keynote address for West Virginia Women's Day at the legislature today, First Lady Gail Manchin emphasized the importance of the five promises she and her husband have made for the state's children. The five promises include providing a caring adult a safe place, a healthy start, a chance to learn, marketable skills, and an opportunity to give back. That's the news. Here's the forecast for tonight. Showers, snow showers, both likely tonight, mid-30s. Tomorrow, showers likely and warmer, high near 40. Tomorrow night, a chance of showers. And for Sunday, partly cloudy with a high near 35. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
WWNR, Beckley.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
On a frigid Wednesday afternoon on Capitol Hill, House of Representatives Minority Whip Steny Hoyer told a rally held by the National Treasury Employees Union to turn up the heat on members of Congress. The NTEU and other federal employee unions are watching as new regulations at the Department of Homeland Security strip away their collective bargaining and due process rights. Selena Masuta reports from the nation's capital.
More than 100 members of the National Treasury Employees Union stood in front of the Capitol to demand collective bargaining rights for employees at the Department of Homeland Security.
This administration and the majority in the House of Representatives and the United States Senate do not believe in the right of employees to collectively bargain for pay, benefits, and working conditions.
That was Democratic Representative Steny Hoyer. The NTEU filed a lawsuit in late January. The lawsuit asked the court to prevent the implementation of final personnel regulations that strip collective bargaining and other rights from all DHS civilian employees. Opponents of these regulations say that they violate the collective bargaining clause in the Homeland Security Act. For Workers Independent News in Washington, D.C., I am Selena Masuta.
With the Las Vegas meeting behind it, but many reform details still unresolved, the AFL-CIO will continue the debate on how best to build power and allocate its resources in the months left before the Chicago convention in July. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney says this Las Vegas meeting did not deepen the differences within the Labor Federation. He says America's labor movement must devote more energy and money to both politics and organizing.
And we have to do both, not one or the other, to strengthen the movement. And a false choice to pit organizing and member mobilization for politics and legislation against each other is really not the right way to be going.
As for his run for another term as AFL-CIO president,
I'm going to do my damnedest to prevail.
Sweeney hopes solidarity prevails and all unions remain in the AFL-CIO once these reform details are decided. The Teamsters' James Hoffa says nobody is talking about leaving the AFL-CIO right now. But SEIU's Andy Stern is clearly leaving that option open. Stern says the trend of declining union membership transcends the AFL-CIO.
Our problem is not what's going to happen to the AFL-CIO as an institution. Our problem is what's going to happen to workers if this trend continues.
More than 80,000 of the women prisoners in the United States are mothers. Between the years 2000 and 2003, the U.S. had more than 3,000 pregnant women in prison. A similar number of babies were born to female inmates. According to the New York Times, at least 13% of inmates are sexually assaulted. Nearly one-fourth of the female inmates are assaulted by guards.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's Bob Kincaid, Head On.
Welcome back. 21 minutes and change before 8 o'clock. I said there was plenty of stuff out there. If you really want to get your outrage going nicely, read the C-section of today's Chaz Gaz. You know, one of these days I'm going to have to build that newspaper. The headline, Mom Wants Tougher Charges Against Meth Lab Suspects. The short and sweet of it, a lady was taking her kids for babysitting services to a woman and a man in St. Albans who were all cooking meth while they were babysitting. Here's a lovely little observation. A pediatrician said that the little boy will have some anger problems as the toxins get out of his body. He might have some lung damage and he shakes. The pediatrician told me today that there's been some short-term damage done to him, the mother said. We won't know about the long-term damage until things progress. Now, am I just misremembering something, or was there a news story a week or so back about a meth bill that would require the makings thereof? What is it, Sudafed? I'm sorry, I'm painfully ignorant on this. Whatever the cold medicine is that you make meth out of would require it to be sort of behind the counter, and you couldn't just walk in and sweep your arm across the shelf and get all the Sudafed into your basket and go buy, 97 bottles of Sudafed to go home and cook into crystal meth because, you're an entrepreneur. Small businessman. And am I misremembering it, or did the retail pharmaceutical industry come out and say, well, we oppose that. I think I'm remembering that correctly. You know, if we already had that law, maybe this little fella, and there's a picture of him there, and okay, confirmation time, Taylor. Beautiful baby? Yeah, see? I don't know if you... Oh, see, okay, we got 3 out of 3 beautiful babies here. That kid's going to have lung problems, anger management problems, maybe brain damage, because his babysitter it doesn't just apply to coal executives. His babysitter didn't realize that they don't attach U-Hauls to hearses. You know, you don't cook meth for the public good. You cook meth because you think you can make a fast buck, and several of them. And the pharmaceutical, the drugstore retail industry saying it would be too much of a hassle to put the Sudafed back behind the shelf with the Vladimir vodka pints and the mini bottles of Grand Marnier and the condoms. You know, everything that young people have a penchant for stealing, they put behind the counter. Everything that's easily stolen, they put behind the counter. How about things that are easily used to make things that poison little children? Somebody out there, do a little digging on this. I want to see if we can find out who's for putting these drugs behind the counter and who's for, you know, letting it, you know, devil may care, Katie bar the door, devil take the hindmost. I have my ideas, but, you know, then again, I'd just be guessing. But probably, is there anybody out there that would be opposed? I mean, and I'm not talking about legislators or lobbyists. I'm talking about ordinary human beings, Republicans, Democrats, I don't care. Who would be opposed to that idea? Is that not a good idea? Hard to say. But at the bottom of the fold, too, we talked about the Aluminum Committee, how Don Blankenship and his pals are trying to keep you and me, us West Virginians, the real West Virginians, not the corporations, the real flesh and blood and bone and gristle human beings, out of the aluminum study meetings at the Environmental Quality Board. Well, the Ethics Committee has said, listen, you're a subset of a governmental organization. You're subject to the open meetings law. You're subject to what? You know, the sunshine law. Because we like to have sunshine in our government meetings, because sunshine is good for us. It's good for government. What's interesting, though, is the fact that the committee's own lawyer said, you know, you are subject to the open meetings law. And the committee said, oh, we don't like that advice. We'll wait and see if maybe the ethics commission will give us a little peck on the cheek and give us a pass. But bless their hearts, the ethics commission said, no. You are a public entity. And you must comply with the state open meetings law. Great language in this article by Ken Ward. He's a good writer. The ruling is a setback for coal industry officials and for board members who had hoped some of the Aluminum Committee's meetings could be held in private and without public notice. That sentence is freighted, I tell you, with meaning. Sit back and ask yourself, why would a coal company who wants to lessen the standards so they can dump more aluminum into our streams? Why wouldn't they want the public to know about that? Answer's really easy. It's one of those Occam's razor kind of things. It's very easy. And then right beside it, insurance commissioner could become elected office. Which I think that's a great idea. I'm not willing to trade out my right to sue an insurance company for offering me a $500 settlement on a $10,000 car that I'm still making payments on. I'm not willing to do that. But I think the time has long since come when the insurance commissioner should be an elected official. And that insurance commissioner, that elected official, you know the insurance industry is going to run somebody because they want someone that they can manipulate and control. Don Colleoni Blankenstein ran Brent Benjamin, or I'm sorry, Brent Blankenship. whatever, that rotten little rat who is a creature of Don's. But it really, the proposal would make the insurance commissioner a formal constitutional member of the West Virginia Board of Public Works. Yeah, that's what all your top dog elected officials are. And it would provide, well, it would provide what a lot of people like, accountability. I like elected officials. I like people who have to come back to me every 4 years or so and say, please, can I keep my job? Because, for instance, if they've shown them to be little more than a tarted up, painted up, fishnet stocking wearing, high heeled prostitute for the insurance agency, we can say, nah, I don't think so. We've had about enough of you. If they won't do their job, if they won't fine insurance companies, if they won't keep their feet to the fire, then throw them out. I like the idea of governmental officials that you can throw out if they don't do a good job. Because every day they're in that office, if they're any kind of politician at all, they're thinking, I got to do another good job today. And, of course, that's the way most of us get up and go to work every morning, isn't it? Or every evening, in my case. Got to do another good job today. Can't mail it in. You know, I got to, like I said, I got to sign it home over my computer. Never mail it in. Never go through the motions. Pour your complete heart and your complete soul into everything you do. Every time the mic comes on, it's got to be real. It's got to be head on. And I want politicians who feel the same way about their job as I feel about mine and you feel about yours. And I don't care if you're sitting behind a computer entering data or analyzing data, or if you're driving nails into boards, or if you're fixing cars or flipping burgers. The rest of us have to do the best job that we possibly can do every single day. And I want that to apply to politicians, too. So I'm behind the idea of an elected insurance commissioner, but I'm still against the idea of selling out my rights and your rights to sue dirty, stinking, rotten, filthy, greed-headed, nefarious, couldn't-care-less-about-West-Virginians insurance companies. So, you know, hey, maybe that's a bipartisan issue we could all get behind. And I don't know if you heard it today, but there was a settlement about bid rigging and price fixing with an insurance company. I can't remember the name of the organization today. But lo and behold, it turns out that it had something to do with Liberty Mutual. Liberty Mutual is a big private workers' comp insurance supplier. And lo and behold, it turns out they were ripping off consumers and sort of making the rates up as they go along and saying, hey, let's throw a premium increase in on this one. Oy vey. And you think I'm kidding when I talk about dirty, stinking, rotten, greed-infested insurance companies. That's their reason to exist. So, yeah, again, lots of good ideas out there. You know, and you know, the cost of a phone call to your elected representative isn't much. And if you go to the websites, you can get the email right away. And don't think for an instant that it's going to be ignored. Because you may not talk to your representative, but someone, a secretary or an assistant who gets the email, will say, look, you've got 92 emails from people saying, get the meth bill passed. You've got 92 emails from people saying, we want Benji's law because we're tired of having our homes invaded by political hucksters with pre-recorded ads. Can you do that? Is it worth your effort? Are you that much into being a citizen? And I guess that's the ground level question. Are you that much into being a citizen? And are you willing to take your citizenship seriously? The phone number around hereabouts is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. Let's go to the phones right now. Mel's with us. Hey, Mel, you're head on.
Hey, Bob. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Happy Friday.
That's pretty good. I'd like to see this weather clear up a little bit more, but I'm not complaining.
I saw a little sunshine today.
Yeah, I was going to say we've done a little better today than we've done in the past few days. I just turned the radio on. I just got in, and I heard you talking about the insurance commissioner being elected.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing been introduced on that in that regard, has there?
Well, there's some rumbling, according to the report in the newspaper today, and I'm not going to sit here and read the newspaper to people, but Delegate Rick Thompson, Wayne County, Democrat, announced on the House floor he's going to file a joint resolution calling for the insurance commissioner to be elected. It'll take a constitutional amendment.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been pushing that, and on the radio and everything else, you know, I know you and I probably feel about the same about Linda Sumner, but you got to give the devil justice. Her and Louisa's introduced a bill to elect the Public Service Commission, and that would be a good start, you know.
Right. That's not a bad idea at all.
No, when they start telling you the answer to paying these high home heating gas bills is to get on the budget plan, and then they all take a bow and say, we're the Public Service Commission of West Virginia. You know, there's something wrong. I agree with you. When they see, well, you know what, next year I got to run for election again, they're going to protect who they're sent down there to protect and not the insurance and the gas and these utility companies.
You're right, Mel. And the thing is, it's very easy. All we as the citizens of this great state have to do is pick up the meat axe that has been provided to us by in the form of the ballot box. If we pick up that meat axe and use it, we will have a government that is responsive to our needs.
Well, I agree with you. And like I said, I hope and pray that all this talk, you know, and you guys being on the radio, you know, you and Dr. Bill, and Dr. Bill had a gentleman on there today giving us a little bit of facts on Social Security. And that's what we need to do. You know, we don't need to have this bull shoved down our throat that we don't know what's going on. We need some facts, you know, because personally, I'm not voting on yes or no on anything unless I know some facts. And them telling me just, you know, broad-based, really, you know, there's no fact there. They're just telling what they think. And like I said, I'm not swallowing it.
Well, right now we've got a White House that's running around doing its best Chicken Little impression, you know, screaming that the sky is falling. And we know what came of Chicken Little.
Well, you know, they teach police officers and all to go into code yellow fast. If they see somebody approaching them, they think they may have a gun or something. And the way they get killed is they don't get in code yellow. They call it fast enough. You know, if you don't think Republicans are trying to do the poor and the needy in, you know, my Lord, yeah, I got a list of things here. Just to start off with, you know, they start off giving the rich a tax break. It was temporary. Now they're wanting to make it permanent, like the Hightower or whoever it is there was talking about on your show the other night. You know, here a couple years ago after Enron, the president let on like the CEOs had, you know, so long to say that their company was everything was intact and, you know, they had a year or so to sign a paper. Now the FCC has been taken over by the corporations, same way at the FDA, you know. They're not protecting us. They're protecting drug companies. Bush has kept us from buying prescriptions, you know, where we can get them cheaper. He's done everything he can to fight us from buying them in Canada. They're doing their best to destroy Social Security, getting out and chanting, you know, hey, hey, ho, ho, Social Security's got to go.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what he's done to benefits for veterans, Medicaid benefits, children's school benefits. You know, he won't fund his own program, No Child Left Behind.
Well, you know, Mel, if you want something that'll really turn your stomach, I've got a story here. We've got reservists and National Guardsmen coming back from Iraq wounded that cannot get adequate medical care because they're not regular military. I mean,
I've heard that. Yeah, that's like I said, that's worse than, that's a sin, what it is.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, it's you know, it's Bush doing it. You know, this guy who supports the troops, you know, my aching back.
Well, you know what we're going to get? We're going to get the same thing that the Banking Association gave us, that if you don't pay your electric bill or your phone bill or something, I've been notified in all mine, that then they're going to report it to you to a credit card, and they're going to be able to raise your credit card interest. And I don't know if that was you. I think it was talking about somebody introduced a bill that they couldn't charge people over 30% interest, where they was charging them 1,059%. I mean, like I said, that's past. You know, that's getting to be sinful.
Yeah, that was Senator Mark Dayton who said that wasn't predatory lending. That's terroristic lending.
Yeah,
and of course the Senate just sent it down in flames. Wouldn't even think of considering it. 74-24, something like that. You know, so there were Democrats in that crowd that were voting with the banking industry.
Well,
too.
You know, I'm bouncing around, but you know, I hope Byrd takes a stand like Kerry did when he says something. Tell him, yeah, that's what I said and that's what I mean. And when he said he's getting. You know, they better check out how Hitler came in power. You know, when Bush is trying to change the required vote from 60 to 51, they're trying to kill the right to filibuster that they've always fought to keep when they were the minority. You know, things are, I'm telling you, they're getting awful close to look like to me as one party running this country plumb into the ground.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Mel. And, you know, I think the reason they got it so upset about Senator Byrd's speech is it hit a little too close to home.
Well, it might get people thinking, you know.
You know, you don't have to send off for a spiffy new swastika armband to be a Nazi. You know, it's a pretty is as pretty does kind of situation. And you're right. We're moving toward one-party rule, and when you get one-party rule, you get fascism.
Well, you know what? I was talking to a buddy today, and he said, yeah, I'd like to see all Democrats. I told him, I said, no, I wouldn't. I said, I like that means and checks, you know. I like them to check each other. I don't want, you know. But I think the bad thing about us, I reckon they tagged us liberals, but I think the bad thing about us you know, you'll hear me talking about Democrats that haven't done things right, and I'll admit it.
Mm-hmm.
But have you ever heard? I haven't heard on the radio yet them talking about a Republican that's screwed up.
No. They're rock solid, and they would sooner die than cross their party's ticket and vote something besides a straight ticket. People complain about straight tickets in West Virginia. You know, all you got to do is look at the last election. The straight ticket voters in West Virginia are not the Democrats. It's the Republicans. And what they're complaining about is the thing that they recognize the most in themselves.
My Lord, I hope, and I'm like old Paul Harvey said, when the country gets sick enough, it needs to throw up.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to throw up. And I hope the Lord people will quit this solid party line stuff and start saying, hey, that's wrong. You know, because if they don't, like I said, it's I can't be optimistic. You know, I'm sorry, but it don't look. I'm 56 years old. I've been through Vietnam and a lot of things, but and I know, you know, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, and but it's I so help me. It's for the working class and the poor people, really for all of us. If the United States was a family or a person, you know, he'd be ready to file for bankruptcy, and they're just running it worse and worse and worse. You know, I just don't. I'm not very optimistic, and I'm sorry, but you know, like I said, I lay up at night worrying about it, but and do what I can do. Like you say, I contact people, but get back on this insurance commissioner. I wish people would push that thing, and we'd see. I don't know if you ever had any dealing with the insurance commission, but
yes.
make up something. And some of you callers out there, make up something. You got a problem and call down there and see what they tell you.
Sorry, can't help you. Hey, Mel, we're out of time.
Appreciate it, Bob.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, bye now. Okay,
this
is News Talk 620 WWNR AM, Beckley, West Virginia. This is Head On, and we'll be back with more of your calls as well as more news. More outrage, and maybe a few laughs after news from CBS. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Boys over here in the corner You know, that grinding guitar and the crashing drums. You know, that's the darkness, by the way. I believe in a thing called love. It hit from a few months back. Yeah, there he sits. He's got his eardrums going and just crashing the hi-hats and beating the tom-tom. No, I never did that. No, not me. Not me. A couple more West Virginia things, you know, because there's so much to keep an eye on with the legislature. Another one to not get behind. I like our new governor. Honest to God, I like our new governor. But he's doing some anti-consumer things out there. And by consumer, I mean normal, regular people, even some Republicans. He's got a new bill. It's House Bill 2886 that he sent in today. And it requires consumers, you know, big, nasty, fire-breathing consumers, evil consumers, makes consumers give businesses 20 days to make up for an alleged unfair trade practice, like false advertising, before filing a lawsuit. Shh, let me tell you a little secret. It's a statute, the Unfair Trade Practices Act, and that also includes suing not somebody else's insurance company, like in third-party bad faith. That includes suing your own insurance company when they screw you. Okay? And this bill would require you and me, say we get ripped off by a business and we want to file a suit against them under the Unfair Trade Practices Act. Okay? You and me, now they didn't take 20 days to screw you. They didn't take 20 days to rip you off. They didn't think twice about putting the wood to you. But here's this bill that says you and me, we get ripped off, screwed, blued, tattooed, and we have to give businesses 20 days notice before we sue them. Now, I gotta ask you, did we give 20 days notice to Afghanistan before we bombed the snot out of them? No, we didn't. Do you give 20 days notice to a burglar before you stop him from knocking down your doors? No, you don't. You know, how many other situations can you think of where the right thing for the victim to do is to give the crook 20 days notice? Okay? Well, that's what House Bill 2886 would do. It would require us to give 20 days notice to a crook company before we sue them for what are called unfair trade practices, otherwise known as cheating or dirty business or bad faith insurance, your own company. Okay? Are we really the bad guys? I mean, I'm looking at some stuff that's coming out of the legislature, whether it's third-party bad faith, now this, the blacklist bill that allows businesses to say any rotten, tawdry thing they want to about an employee and be immune from suit for it. And I'm beginning to get the notion that some people in our government think we're the bad guys. You know, the victims. You understand? We're not the bad guys. And somebody needs to just quietly, hey, Governor, we like you. We really, really like you. But we're not the bad guys. And the lawyers that represent us aren't the bad guys. Okay? We're the good guys. We make West Virginia go. We get up and we go to work every day, and we deserve the protection of the courts and the legislature and the governor's office, not their approbation. We're the good guys. Okay? The phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967, and we do try to be nice to first-time callers. Trish is with us. Hey, Trish, you're head on. Trish?
Yeah.
There you are.
Yeah, I can't pick you up on my radio. I had to call and ask what the subject was tonight.
Oh, that's okay. No computer, huh?
No. Can't afford it.
I understand. These things happen.
I'm just one of those hardworking Americans that just can't afford a computer.
Well, God bless you. You can always write to the FCC and tell them that you believe that Southern West Virginia's news talk station needs to be heard at night.
Well, I'm going to tell you, you got everything on there but you. You know, I got a little bit of gospel singing and a little bit of something else, and I can't pick you up. And I even got my large radio to where it's got a shortwave on it, and mm-hmm. it has all these gizmos on it trying to pick you up. And I picked up a little bit, but they just bleed you out, so I can't pick you up.
Oh, that's a shame.
So I couldn't tell what the topic was.
But I appreciate
called you
calling.
The other night. It was just, this is only the second time I called. And, you know, I was trying to tell you about the pharmaceutical bill that was in the, and I guess I didn't make myself plain. I was just so upset about that bill.
I remember the call now. I do remember the call.
And that they were trying to protect the pharmaceutical companies over what they did to our military men.
Right.
And the reason I told you that it was because of a more conservative judge is because the military men had hired a lawyer to say that the drugs that they were being given were harmful.
Mm-hmm.
And he had told the Defense Department to no longer give those drugs. And they turned around and gave it to 937 men anyway. And then when they were questioned about it, was, well, it was just our mistake.
Yeah. Oopsie, sorry.
So that's what I was trying to get across. That's the reason I was asking people, please call your congressman, senator, call your family. Tell them to knock down this pharmaceutical bill. Because what I had picked up on my shortwave was the bill also had in it that if your doctor tells you about a drug that is bad for you not to take,
mm-hmm.
if they tell you about it, they can lose their license for 3 years and not be able to practice medicine. That doesn't really sound like the America I grew up in.
No, Trish, it's not, because, and frankly, government has its place, but one place government has no business is in the relationship between me and my doctor.
That's true.
And I apply that across the board.
Yep.
So, yeah, I do remember your phone call, and I looked around for it, and I know what you're talking about. Some of it has to do with the anthrax vaccines.
Yeah, because what had been told, and I picked it up on international news when I had my shortwave on, and foreign governments were talking about the American people didn't know about, we have over 1,000 of our military men who had been given that anthrax drug who had... who was dying from it, who had become mentally ill.
Yes.
And all of that is hid from the American people, and they are in these hospitals somewhere over in Germany, so the American people don't know about it.
Right, but there's
that
no...
That made me so angry.
And it should. And, you know, why aren't we hearing about it? We're not hearing about it because we've got to pay attention to the fact that Martha Stewart got out of prison today.
Isn't that wild?
You know, we got to pay attention to the fact that Michael Jackson's on trial, and heaven knows they're arguing the fate of Robert Blake before the jury in California. You ever get the idea we're being played for, you know, a low rent grade of sucker?
Yeah. I said to my neighbor, she's a school teacher, and she said, tell me the difference between you and I'm a liberal and you're a conservative. And I said, yeah, but I'm a Democrat. All my family has been Democrat all the way back as far as I can count, six generations. And mm-hmm. we were just hardworking people, coal miners. And I said, I can remember my grandmother telling us about getting script. I don't know if anybody knows what I'm talking about when I talk about getting script and going to the company store.
Lots of people remember that, Trish.
And I said, and I just believe in the military, I believe in a constitution, and I believe in government upholding this constitution.
Amen.
I was talking to Steve today, and I don't think he was real happy with me because I told him that and I put it to him like this. I said, I'm not going to tell you whether I'm a Democrat or a Republican, but I can remember how the Republicans wanted 60 votes because they did not want Bill Clinton or any other Democrats putting all the people in the United States Supreme Court that they wanted to.
Right.
And so it took 60 votes to make sure one party did not, you know, just put all their people on there.
Right.
And I says, and now they want to change that. But I says, the president, I says, And then they accuse the Democrats of using the race card. And I says, but is that not what's going on now with, well, here we have a Cuban and here we have a Mexican And I says, and neither one of them are American-born, and he wants to put them on the United States Supreme Court.
Right.
I do not want a non-born American citizen on the United States Supreme Court. I don't care which party he's from.
Right, and I don't want...
Because he's got family, friends, relatives, and I don't want him making laws for his country instead of for mine.
Very true, and I don't want Arnold Schwarzenegger for my president either.
No, I don't either, and I don't want Condoleezza Rice for president, and I don't want Hillary Clinton for one.
Me either.
And I just like to find a good old American boy.
Well, I don't
see somebody out there.
For my purposes, Trish, I don't base it on gender. Okay,
no.
There might be a woman out there who would make an excellent president, but neither Hillary nor Condoleezza are that woman.
No.
You know, Condoleezza has proven her ineptness from the moment she got in government. You know, the August 6th presidential daily briefing that she looked at, and it was. Well, Trish, what would you do? Somebody hands you a document from the CIA, okay? You're an exalted mucky-muck in the administration, Trish, and they hand you a document, and the title of that document, and it's August 6, 2001, and the title of that document is Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S. Would that strike a chord in you?
Well, I sure wouldn't be going to Iraq.
Exactly, Trish. You know, you've got great common sense, and you know, as spring gets nearer and nearer, you will be able to hear the show at night because we power down at sunset. So, you know, hang in there with me, and pretty soon you'll hear the show.
Okay, I want to ask you something. Have you heard about this military Marine who they're trying to absolutely hang, I guess. They're not standing up for him, and it was because, I guess he's into Crete, where all the suicide bombers are.
Mm-hmm.
And in Arabic, he told them to stop, and they didn't stop, and they kept coming at him. And as you know, that's how a lot of our men have lost their life, is with suicide bombers in cars.
Mm-hmm.
So he shot into the car. And the men happened to be unarmed, but he didn't know that. And so then, after they got him out of there, he blew the car up so that it couldn't be used. And they weren't Iraqis after all. But anyway, they went to put him on trial.
Court-martialing.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, if we're in a war... Let's be in the war.
Well, you're right, Trish.
You know, we can't play this political correctness with our men's lives.
But the problem we run across in this, Trish, is that we have taken soldiers, and soldiers whose job is to break things, blow things up, win wars, and go home. You know, that's the way it works.
Right. I agree with that.
And we have taken them, and we have put them into impossible situations. But we, you know, because of this administration's policies in Iraq, they're walking around with great big bullseyes on their back. They don't know who the enemy is. They don't know who's going to shoot at them and who's not. And certainly somewhere along the way, they've been taught the lessons from Vietnam where even little children can hide a hand grenade. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, sure I do. I lived through that. I had my daughter on a military base. I know many a soldier that came home with a body bag from that.
And the problem is, some of those soldiers may have been told about that, and they know that they're in an impossible situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem you create when you run a war on the cheap and without applying significant skull sweat to how you're going to do it. This is, you know, this isn't Napoleonic warfare where two armies line up across from each other and shoot at each other till, you know, one's left standing and the other's on the ground.
Yeah, my dad was in World War II, and I said to him, I said, you know, we keep hearing so much about, it's against the rules of law in this country. I said, what were the rules of law? He said, they had our uniform and we had our uniform, and when they took their uniform off, there was no protection for them. Because then, if they shot at us, we shot them. You know.
Yeah. And by the same token, once you were captured,
right.
You know, we were pretty good about observing the Geneva Convention back then.
Right. He said the Geneva Convention does not apply if they take off their uniform.
Well, that's the question about this war. There are no uniforms. We're the only ones in a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is when we say that the Geneva Conventions don't apply to the people that were fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Then if it doesn't apply to them, then it doesn't apply to us, does it?
Well, I know, but we're in uniform and they're not.
Right, but if we abuse them, You know, because if you get right down and think about it, Trish, what is the Geneva Convention except the codification of the golden rule from the Bible, do unto others as you would have them do unto you? You know, war is nasty and brutal.
Yeah, it is.
But what you're acknowledging is when the person is unarmed and no longer combating you, when they're a prisoner, you don't want to do anything to them that you wouldn't want to have done to your own soldiers if they become captives or prisoners.
Well, now, this is true, but now, when they're out of uniform and they're blowing you up with suicide bombs, which I don't think we've ever had to deal with that before except for...
kamikazes.
Right.
And, you know, little Vietnamese children with grenades.
And, you know, instead of having... I tell you, the thing that really aggravated me is when I heard military men state, we no more have any ammo.
Yeah, that's...
And the president says, well, we have to have an agreement with this foreign country who is making ammo, and we have to have a, what is it called? We have to have a,
supplemental congressional appropriation.
No, it's where you got your company over there and you got to have a trade agreement.
Yeah, a trade agreement, sure.
And so we can have some ammo made. Why is some foreign country making our ammo? Why do we not have a company here making our ammunition for our military?
Beats me, Trish. I mean, you can ask the same question. Why did we just give multi-billion-dollar bonuses to Halliburton when they haven't done anything right in this whole war? We just gave them bonuses. You know, what George Bush didn't do it. You and I did it. It's our money.
This is true.
It's enough to make you run rabbits.
Well, did you hear about the Marine that formed the Minutemen?
Yes, I did hear about that.
And did you hear about that? Elderly people that owned a farm and one thing or the other that was asking for help, that went down there on the Arizona border trying to protect them, and I guess two of them were our ex-military, and one of them came out on the porch and the FBI shot him down, and he was unarmed.
Oh, now that's a new
one.
You
haven't heard that one, have you?
I'll have to research that. Trish, I really appreciate the call. It's always nice talking to you.
Okay.
You have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
All right, let's keep it rolling. Ed, you're head on. Hey, Ed, how you doing?
Howdy, Bob.
What's up?
Not a whole lot. I was just calling on this election of the insurance commissioner. I think that's a great idea because we don't have nothing down there now.
No.
You know, of all the insurance violations and so forth, there's not been one insurance company fined or disciplined for any malpractice procedures.
What, in the last year, 2 years?
I don't know, ever.
Yeah.
I'm talking about ever.
Yeah.
And I am for 100% because we could afford to elect somebody we never heard of and do better than what we're doing right now.
And I'm sure that we're probably paying this appointed insurance commissioner more than we'd pay an elected one.
You ain't kidding. But that wasn't the reason I called you. I was going to call and put George Bush's head under the sand, if I could.
Do please.
He was talking out of both sides of his mouth again, if you heard the news today, and he keeps using this kind of stuff and don't know that he should look, when he's pointing that finger out there, look at his thumb and see where it's pointing. He talked about today that there could be no success in a country that was occupied by another country.
You're kidding.
You know, what a hypocrite, you know. And he's talking about Syria.
And Lebanon.
And Lebanon. And here we are in Iraq.
He must have been speaking off the cuff. That couldn't be part of a prepared remark.
But he said it.
He
was on television himself and said it.
I know. That's the kind of thing that makes the White House speechwriters and Karen Hughes and all that crowd just run and scream.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mentioned before, when you do wrong and you do stuff like that, it's like trying to hold a great big truck in or tube under the water in the river. A little bit of it comes up, don't it?
Oh, it does.
And he talked about Social Security. Did you happen to listen to Bill today, Dr. Bill?
I heard some of Dr. Bill's show. It was
he had a guy that was an authority on, and I didn't hear none of these right-wingers call in on it either. But he had him on there explaining Social Security, which I think he did a great job, him and Paul together. And then Bush calls it an acute situation. Now, that's I know that he said other, used other words, but that's the one I, that sticks out in my mind, the word acute. And, of course, you know what that word means, but for yeah. some of these right-wingers that's listening in, they need to go to the dictionary and find out what that means and then what a liar he is. But he just four or five things. He's lied on that. He's lied on the war. He's lied about how exporting jobs, the good jobs, helps our country. And aliens crossing the border is okay. And the undermining Social Security. Though, and I've got a calendar here I'm going to give to you if I can. It's just a little, like, 5x5 pages of 365 days in a year. And every day what he said is really a joke. I want to get that to you some way.
Oh, absolutely. We'll find a way, Ed.
Okay. And then, but electing this male, well, one of my friends and I have talked about the mismalfunction of the commissioner down at the insurance commissioner. But another one is that really disturbs me is on this, I went over to this thing on this slam thing out here where I live, and you wouldn't believe who's sitting on that board just that quickly.
Oh,
it's Doug Matty. Of all the rotten anti-union, anti-working person, they must have been hard up, and they might have asked everybody in the county but me and you, because he's on there, and that tells me a whole lot about our county commission and the zoning board when they put people like that on there. And it's no wonder that they're for putting Walmart. They should set Walmart right in the middle of Fayetteville. That would wake the people up, I reckon.
Bulldoze the courthouse.
Yeah. But he's absolutely was sitting up there in that, like a jewelry box, you know, and he had to speak out on something.
Oh,
but
man.
You know what? That Chamber of Commerce is getting more widespread, and the people still don't catch on to what that outfit is.
Well, I don't know. Maybe when spring comes and the signal goes a little further, Ed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I hope so. And you know, a couple of us has done everything we can, and we've got letters back from these people in Washington. But it's, you know, getting that out of the committee.
Oh, I know.
Is going to be, I believe it could pass if it'd get it out on the floor.
Well, yeah, as far as the insurance commissioner is concerned, it's got to pass by 2/3 in both houses, and then it has to be sent to the people for a referendum because it would require amending the Constitution to create a new Board of Public Works officer.
Whatever it takes.
Absolutely. I'm behind it. Ed, thanks so much. We got to go to our break.
All right.
You have a great weekend now.
All right. You too, Bob.
Later.
Bye.
All right, news update from Carl Mack, followed by Jim Hightower's always trenchant and enjoyable commentary. Then we'll come back and go back to the phones and your calls. The phone number is 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. See, if this was G. Gordon Liddy, he'd say, Niner, Niner. But I'm not G. Gordon Liddy. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head on.
Good evening. This is Carl Mack, WWNR News. A Greenbrier County woman reported missing this week has been found unharmed. Amanda Ray King of White Sulphur Springs called state police after seeing media reports. She said she had been staying with a friend in Covington, Virginia, and had not told anyone she was going to Covington. Family members called police after King failed to show up for work on Monday. She had last been seen at the Allegheny Club in White Sulphur Springs Friday night. Police say King is unharmed and in good health. Well, Martha Stewart is out of prison. Stewart left prison this morning at 12:30 after serving a 5-month sentence for lying about a stock sale. The domestic diva left in a 2-vehicle motorcade and headed to a nearby airport where she boarded a private jet about 45 minutes later for the hour-long flight to New York. Before boarding the plane with her daughter, Stewart smiled and waved to reporters and fans. 18-year-old Ashley Hughes of Hyco was killed last night around 10:30 when her vehicle ran off Route 19 between Oak Hill and Fayetteville into the median then traveled north in the southbound lane and struck the rear tires of a tractor trailer, ripping them from the trailer. Hughes was pronounced dead at the scene. The driver of the tractor trailer from Ontario, Canada, was not injured. The accident is under investigation by Fayetteville Police and the Fayette County Sheriff's Office. Ashley's sister, Courtney, was also killed just 3 years ago while a student at Concord College. She was riding in a car with other students in Athens when the accident occurred. A judge has refused to dismiss charges against a man accused of a 12-year-old murder. William Bradford of Nicholas County is charged in the 1993 murder and robbery of John Pate Sr. He was originally indicted on the charges that year, but they were dismissed when a bloody hatchet found in Bradford's vehicle turned out not to be the weapon that was used in the murder. Tonight, partly cloudy, rain and snow showers, mid-30s. Saturday showers likely, but warmer, high near 40. For Saturday night, a chance of showers, low 25, snow showers, that is. And then for Sunday, partly cloudy, with temperatures in the mid-40s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
Hi, this is Linda Luger, Executive Director of the United Way of Southern West Virginia. Thanks for the generous support you provided during the United Way Fall 2004 campaign. Did you know that 99 cents of every dollar donated stays right here in Raleigh, Fayette, Nicholas, and Summers County to help the 20 agencies the United Way supports, including the Red Cross, Girl Scouts, Commission on Aging, Women's Resource Center, Fishes and Loaves, and 15 other nonprofit agencies. Your tax-deductible gift helps the many who are unable to help themselves. Please continue to support the United Way of Southern West Virginia. It's a great investment in our community. If you would like additional information, please contact me at 253-2111. That's the United Way of Southern West Virginia, making a lasting impression on our community.
Your MacArthur Walmart store will be opening soon, and Walmart is hiring. Join the world's best retailing team, recognized by Fortune Magazine as the most admired company in the world. As a member of the Walmart team, you'll receive competitive wages and enjoy benefits including merchandise discounts, 401k, stock purchase plan, profit sharing, health benefits, and career advancement opportunities. Just come by Walmart's hiring center located at 158 Dye Drive in the Harper Industrial Park weekdays between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. or call 252-2138. Walmart, an equal opportunity employer.
WWNR Beckley.
How far would you let a boss push you? Maybe your boss keeps refusing to raise your pay and also cuts back on your health care. Still, jobs are short these days and wages everywhere are low, so you stick it out. But what if the boss then has surveillance cameras put in to keep an eye on you at work and also requires drug testing on the job? This invasion of your privacy angers you, but you still need the job, so you shrug it off. But next, the boss wants to follow you out of the workplace and control what you do on your own time. If you do things after hours that do not conform to your boss's own particular beliefs, you're fired. Would you put up with that? Believe it or not, more and more bosses are insisting that they have the right to monitor and regulate the activities of employees off the job, even perfectly legal activities. Howard Wires is one such boss. He's honcho of WICO, an insurance management corporation in Michigan. Howard doesn't like smokers, so he has instituted an anti-smoking policy. Fine, except that Wires' policy outlaws smoking off the job as well as on. He has imposed random, mandatory breathalyzer tests on his 200 employees. Fail once, and you're fired. You work for me, Wires says. This is what I expect. You don't like it? Go someplace else. For Howard, a former football coach, it's a matter of making people better, more virtuous even. He says he used to hone his football players mentally and physically. And he says, I think that's what we need to do in the workplace. Excuse me, Howard, but who elected you our nanny? If he can be the no-smoking dictator, other bosses can dictate that employees can't have a beer after work, must go to a particular kind of church on Sunday, or can't have a Democratic bumper sticker on their cars. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight back, call the National Work Rights Institute, 609-683-0313.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac.
about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
He's got the heart of a conservative, pickled on a jar on his desk. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Thanks for the cue there, boy. He's apprenticing over here with the lovely and talented Taylor Sky. It's about 23 minutes before 9 o'clock here in beautiful uptown Beckley. You know, Jim Hightower's usually pretty spot on, pretty tight with his facts, but he was talking... Yeah, you can be fired for having a beer after work. You can be fired for not going to the right church. You can be fired for having a Democratic bumper sticker on your car. That one Jim missed. Because if you're a regular listener to this show, you know that back before the election, you remember that poor lady down in Alabama who was, in fact, fired. Yes, fired for having a John Kerry bumper sticker on her car, her good, upstanding, Christian, godly, right-wing, extremist employer down in the great state of Alabama fired her for having a John Kerry bumper sticker on her car. So that's already happened, Mr. Hightower. Nothing I'm proud of pointing out. Okay, let's go back to the phones. The phone number, of course, 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. And Chris is with us. Hey, Chris, your head on.
Hey. I tell you, she was fired. Yes, she was fired because she had a bumper sticker on her. And I think I told you one time before that I didn't get a job in town here one time because I didn't go to the right church.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Yeah. I was going to start off with something else. I was going to say something funny, but you said that, so I had to say that. Here's what I was going to say. I was going to go, Bob Kincaid, if this had been an actual administration, you would have been where to lend your support.
Exactly.
This is only a test.
That's good.
I was saying that so the listening station of Echelon in West Virginia could hear me.
Yes,
oh,
indeed.
I'm defacing Bush. Hello.
Yeah, we emailed back and forth a little bit today about this.
Yeah.
Tell folks about that, Chris.
There is the biggest listening station for the National Security Agency is in England, but they have one in West Virginia, and you helped tell me this is in the Eastern Panhandle, you said?
That general region, I do believe. South Fork of the Potomac?
Yeah. Okay. This is a station that is, they were started to help during the Cold War,
mm-hmm.
intercepting traffic, shortwave, any kind of...
Soviet stuff,
yeah. And so, you know, now it's more used for domestic. And with the Patriot Act, oh my goodness, your listeners know about that.
Mm-hmm.
It is being used to snoop on everybody. And I was saying, well, you know, there's no telling where this information winds up.
Yeah, and we thought it was illegal for the government to do that, but it turns out it's quite legal.
Yeah, it's very legal. So I was making the point in my email to you. I can imagine what the activist in West Virginia that want to do something about the coal companies that are basically, oh, what can we say, killing people for money.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what they are doing listening to these activists? And can you imagine that more than likely this information it's probably, you know, who knows, maybe Don Blankenship gets a briefing up.
Yeah, you never, it wouldn't surprise me in the least.
It wouldn't surprise me either. It's a book I'm reading called Chatter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got it at your local library,
read it.
I haven't made it 100 pages into this book, and I tell you what, I've got to find a way to buy a copy of it.
Do you have it there in front of you, Chris?
Hold on, just one sec.
Yeah, sure. The name of the book is Chatter, and he sent me some excerpts through the email today, and it is spooky stuff, and this isn't weekly world news material either.
But as I read a little farther into this book today, that eavesdropping place, it's called Spruce Grove, I believe it is.
Sugar Grove.
That, there's a little passage in this book that says, that hints that the reason that it is there is Senator Robert Byrd's fault to get it there.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's awfully good at getting federal installations to West Virginia.
Yeah. The one that wound up in West Virginia used to be in North Carolina.
Huh.
And they were going to they abandoned it, and they moved, thanks to Senator Byrd, to West Virginia. Now, they gave it over to the Forestry Commission.
Really?
And they were just going to let the forest, you know, the land basically take it back.
Mm-hmm.
And a group of astronomers from several southern universities said, we'll take it. And the Forestry Commission said, we can't sell it to you. But, and there's always a but. So those astronomers bought some land, I can't remember exactly where, that they thought the Forestry Commission would like. So they did a trade. And so now the astronomers are there. And the details that they give of what was in this building,
There was a giant radio telescope there too, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and we're not talking about the Green Bank Observatory.
No, no, no. They said that they left under the floors, they left tons and tons and tons of high-end fiber optics, stuff like you would not believe. And they left it there. Now, we had one the British first started it on an island in, I cannot remember where, but they had one. Oh, it was a stopover for, I'll have to look it up.
Okay.
But the British had started that one, and there was an indigenous people there. And the British government said, get out.
Yep, see ya.
See ya. They moved them all over to another island. And the British government finally decided to, quote-unquote, lease it to the Americans.
Funny how that works.
It's funny how that works, you know.
So eventually the National Security Agency gets its mitts on it.
Yeah.
And now it's used, this installation in West Virginia, is used for spying on Americans.
Basically.
Right. And the book, you've got it in front of you now, right, Chris?
Yeah.
Chatter?
It's called Chatter, Dispatches from the Secret World of Global Eavesdropping by Patrick Redden Keefe, K-E-E-F-E. And it came out this year, 2005. I checked this out from the library. Published by Random House. I tell you,
It sounds like a go and find it kind of book.
Yeah, and I looked up Spruce Grove in here, in the back. Now it's funny that it mentions Senator Byrd. Senator Byrd is not in the index.
Huh.
West Virginia is not in the index, and it mentions West Virginia, but Spruce Grove is. And there is a good little tale of graft having to do with it, then it's just, turn to that page. You'll love this. Okay.
Are you one of those people that uses Post-it notes in reading books?
Actually, no, it's Kleenex.
Well, okay. I've got a similar disease. I do it with Post-it notes. I love those little tape flags.
Okay, where is it? There have been allegations that Thompson CSF have bribed Brazilian officials in order to secure the contract. This is for contracts to basically fund and build. Basically, it comes down to, ultimately, the contract was awarded to Raytheon, R-A-Y-T-H-E-O-N.
Oh, yes, fine defense contract.
Fine defense contract. A major American technology firm, and it winds up a major contractor at the Echelon Satellite Interception Station at Sugar Grove. And it turns out that the graft involved here, the guy, the main guy that was involved in the graft, was a major, quote-unquote, stockholder in Spruce Grove.
Oh, no, no, no. That couldn't be.
That couldn't be.
Yes, it could.
Yes, it could. So I just have to wonder, I mean, West Virginia is pretty centrally located. And as you said, it is West Virginia's Canadian highway.
Yeah, we're 8 hours from everybody.
Yeah.
Or within
especially
it.
From a little to the east.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So you can, I know they're snooping on everywhere, but I can just imagine. No, I can't, and I really don't want to, but I should. I can imagine what the coal mining industry is using this for.
Oh, and now that they're a part of national, we're urging that coal mining be considered a national security industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Now you'll have. Now you'll have little guys in the NSA inspecting the coal mines and going, I don't see anything wrong here. Judy, I don't know what you're talking about. This sludge dam is just fine. Look, it's sludge. It's a dam. What could be wrong with it?
Oh, mercy. Chris, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
I will try to be a little bit more detailed on this. I'm just getting into this book, and I tell you, it's amazing.
Okay, well, I'm glad you could share the title and the author with us. Who knows? It may be banging around in a library somewhere around here, too. I'm going to try to get my hands on it.
Well, I tell you, it'll be worth it.
Well, I look forward to it. Who is Patrick Keefe? I mean, beyond being the author, do they have a blurb in the book as to what his credentials are?
You're not going
to
believe this. He is a third-year law student at Yale.
Yeah.
He is a Marshall Scholar and a 2003 fellow at the Dorothy and Lewis B. Coleman Center for Scholars and Writers at the New York Public Library. A third-year student at Yale Law School, he has written for the New York Review of Books, the Yale Journal of International Law, Legal Affairs, and Slate. This is his first book.
I just wanted to check and make sure that, because I'm sure that the little wingnuts out there, it's one of those liberal books written by some liberal who probably used to write for the Weekly World News.
Well, I went to the NSA's website today, and I think I sent you a little thing of that.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to their website, and you can look up some pretty interesting stuff.
There's a lot of information out there if we only bother to, pull ourselves away from Survivor and Michael Jackson's trial and Martha Stewart's arrival home.
But
long
I've
enough
got
to look
share
for.
A fun tidbit with your audience that I sent to you. Now, this is totally amazing, and I could not believe it. Once I'd love to start digging into it. That's why I come up with the Sun Yard Moon thing. I said, I'm going to find out some stuff about it. The New York Times owns 50% interest in the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, it never stops.
That's amazing. You talk about riots. Oh, the curse of the Bambino. Oh, yeah, right. Marketing term.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. Bob, take care.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks, bye-bye. Chris. Speaking of spooks, our illustrious and fearless Director of Central Intelligence, Porter Goss, or as we like to refer to him as Porter Potty Goss. I've got a news story here from March the 2nd from the Associated Press. Liberals! And I love the way this thing starts out. Dateline Simi Valley, California. In a rare public appearance Wednesday. Do you remember a time when we used to hear, in a rare public appearance? You remember hearing that? If you're my age, maybe you were 18, 15, next generation up, you were in your 20s. Be listening to the news and you'd hear Walter Cronkite or someone. In a rare public public appearance today in Red Square, the aging premier of the Soviet Union said, "We're getting a little more Soviet every day, aren't we? We got Walmart out there, who is to America what the Goom department store was to Muscovites. If Goom doesn't have it, you don't need it. Just replace Goom with Walmart." In a rare public appearance Wednesday, CIA Director Porter Goss, now just wait for this. And we talked last hour of the fact that, you know, you and me, us, we get up every day, or some of us every night, and we go into work. And we know, down to the soles of our shoes, we know that we have to do the best job we possibly can. If you work for that insurance company in Michigan, you can't even have a cigarette. But we know we have to do the best job we possibly can. And we know that if we are caught complaining about our job, moaning and groaning, that we're going to be deemed to be not a very good employee. And we will become, what's the word I'm looking for? Expendable. Replaceable. Now get me somebody more cheerful. So, Porter Potty Goss comes creeping out of wherever it is that he slithers into. And he said on Wednesday that he is overwhelmed by the many duties of his job. Now remember, you can't just let this stuff go flying down into the memory hole. You've got to keep up with stuff. You've got to commit some memory to these things. Do you remember when he was interviewed about the CIA before he was ever even nominated as a potential director of Central Intelligence, and he said, "Well, you know, I used to work for the CIA, but I wouldn't be qualified to be an officer of the CIA now." He said that in an interview. A few days, a few weeks later, he was nominated for a spot as director of Central Intelligence, a man who admits that he is incompetent for the job. So now he comes creeping out into the light of day this past Wednesday, and he says he's overwhelmed by the many duties of his job. He says he has to devote 5 whole hours every day, day in and day out, 5 entire hours he has to devote to preparing for and delivering an intelligence briefing to George Bush. Now, if you... I can even work up some sympathy for Mr. Goss on this one. Can you imagine taking complicated Central Intelligence, highly classified information with great big long foreign names and words that have 3, 4, 5, sometimes even 6 syllables in them, and trying to reduce them to an intelligence briefing that basically reads with no more complexity than C-spot, C-spot run? For that, I have some sympathy for Mr. Goss. But listen to this quote. He spends 5 hours out of every day just preparing and delivering an intelligence briefing to the single most unintelligent political hack in the entire known universe, George Bush. But then he says, in his remarks, this is a quote, not making this up. "I couldn't pay to have somebody make this stuff up. The jobs I'm being asked to do, the 5 hats that I wear, are too much for this mortal. I'm a little amazed at the workload." Could somebody hand me a tissue? I think I'm going to cry. There are people, working Americans, who stand in freezing cold doing their job, subjecting themselves, in some instances, to environmental hazards and poisonous chemicals. There are West Virginians in the Ohio River Valley south of Parkersburg who can't open their tap without drinking poison from DuPont and still manage to get up and go to their jobs every blessed day. And they do it with a smile on their face.
The jobs I'm being asked to do, the five hats that I wear, are too much for this mortal. I'm a little amazed at the workload. I'm a little amazed at Mr. Goss.
We are paying him a horse-gagging load of money for those 5 hours a day that he has to devote to writing reports that use words of no more than two syllables to explain world threats to the most ignorant man in elected office in the known universe, George Bush. I got sympathy for that, but for God's sakes, we don't want to hear you complain, Porter, okay?
Who said, has anybody who ever ran the Central Intelligence Agency, never mind that, who ran the FBI, ever come out and said in an address, the jobs I'm being asked to do, the five hats that I wear are too much for this mortal? Now, maybe I'm just overly simplifying things.
Maybe I... But if the Peter Principle is kicking you in the butt, and it's clear to you that you have risen well beyond the highest level of your own incompetence,
quit! Resign! Bail out! Drop 10 and punt! Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. Leave. Because if he's saying that the five hats I have to wear are too much for this mortal, that means sooner or later we're going to get another 9/11 because he's going to be asleep just like Condoleezza Rice was asleep, just like George Bush was asleep, just like the... Write this one down. Get a pencil and a piece of paper. The jobs I'm being asked to do, the five hats that I wear, are too much for this mortal. Porter Goss, Wednesday, March the 2nd, 2005. Put a highlighter to it. Put it on, use a piece of paper. Put a magnet with it on your refrigerator. Remember that quote. For the day that the terrorists strike us, because it wasn't a week ago that he was also in Congress saying, you're no safer. We can't protect you. We have no idea what's going on. It's a matter, with the terrorists, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So do keep that in mind. And remember who appointed this man. This man who is amazed at the workload. Remember, this is News Talk 620, WWNR AM, Beckley, West Virginia. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
He's got a brain, and he's not afraid to use it. Literally, of course, here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Almost 6 minutes after 9 o'clock, that means about 54 minutes left of potential for your conversational insights before the weekend hits. And after that, you'll have to just bottle it up until Monday night at 7 o'clock. And if you don't want to bottle it up, the phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. Jethro's with us. Jethro, man, I thought you'd fallen off the face of the planet.
Bob.
How are you?
How's it going?
It's going great.
Yeah, I get to listen to you a couple times a week. I'm usually at work, and only get to call in maybe once, and I've been busy the last few Friday nights, so.
Like I said, I thought, I don't know, I thought maybe they'd finally found you a dog cage down in Guantanamo or something.
Not yet.
Well, don't go down without a struggle, man.
But big darkness
soon come. Yes, yes, Lord, yes.
I don't know where to start. This Porter Goss thing, he was also complaining about the intelligence and the, you know, who was in charge and the so-called intelligence czar still over in Iraq, old Negroponte.
Yeah.
Master of the Death Squad.
trained at the School of Americas. He's got his own little background. But
Battalion 316.
Yeah. But then Bush came on with Goss standing right behind him with a kind of a smirk on his face, and Bush was going, oh, there's no problem. But, you know, Goss was just, he's just funning. So
I'll tell you what, this could be some pricey fun, Jethro.
Yeah, the pricey fun is going to come this weekend, isn't it, with the 24-cent increase in the gasoline price?
Yeah, that's going to be a real kick.
I mean, how much did it go? I just went up how much in the last couple of days here?
Oh, it went from like $1.87, $1.89 to $2.05.
Right.
Yeah, 18 cents or so.
Yeah, they hit us, you know, hit us with the low raise first, and, you know, set you up with the jab, then throw the overhand right.
Oh, now this feels more like a kidney punch. You know, dirty, below the belt, you know, just how you'd expect them to act, Jethro.
Exactly. And do you know, I mean, it's coming from all sides. You know, we're open for business now in West Virginia. Nothing's sacred. You got the money. Evidently, we're going to sell it to you. You know, nationwide, I mean, you know, we've got the Medicare cuts, the education cuts. This big darkness, you know, soon come is going to be for real.
I wonder if maybe Hunter Thompson knew something.
Perhaps. But, you know, he was talking about, you know, he was saying this is the, our, you know, his generation would be the first to leave the country in worse shape.
Yep.
For the first time. And, you know, he wasn't too happy. The infrastructure is crumbling and, you know, we're over fighting wars and.
Fighting wars that we ought to know better than to be fighting.
Exactly.
I mean, I just pulled a story off the wire. I don't know if you heard about this. You know, the Italian journalist that was captured by someone in Iraq? Did you hear a little bit about her?
Yeah, they blew her away, which is typical. I mean, you know, you've heard stories of them over there. They're shooting first, asking questions later.
Yeah. An agent, an Italian intelligence officer, was rushing, saving this woman's life, and American troops blew him away and wounded her.
Right. And you have to rush. You know, they were rushing because they were scared of the Iraqis killing them, and here they end up, you know, being killed by the Americans. I mean, can you get any crazier than that?
Oh, well, it's your phrase, man. You use it.
It's madness, I tell you.
Madness!
So, yeah, I just don't know. And I'll tell you one thing, this marine drowning.
Yeah.
I used to be a lifeguard. Actually, you know, I was the oldest, I might have been the oldest lifeguard east of the Mississippi River for a while. I mean, I was doing it when I was 37 years old, just to be able to, you know, come back and stay in West Virginia and not work out of state.
Right.
And for that boy to have they let him drown.
I don't see any other explanation, Jethro, and I'm sure I upset people when I say it, but there were people standing around the pool.
There had to have been, and he was not alone, and, you know, and the Marines were dogging him. You can't tell me there wasn't somebody right there swimming with him, dogging him the whole way until he went under, you know, and I think they let him go under and stay for a little while.
And we will never, and, you know, let's face it, that poor boy's parents, those grieving West Virginians, are never going to know the truth.
And that'll teach the rest of those recruits a hell of a lesson, too.
Yeah, the only way you're getting out of boot camp other than with a Marine's uniform on is feet first.
Yeah, and I saw on the list there where one of the callers, I can't think of what her name is, she was a Marine or something.
Yeah, that's Michelle.
Yeah, and was giving you a hard time over it, and to say it couldn't happen, but, you know, when they drafted T-Snakes back during the Vietnam War, and those guys refused to go along with the program, they had them hogtied, you know, hands bound behind their back, hanging upside down.
Yeah.
They were torturing these guys, and that was a big blow-up over that when they found out that they had done that to a bunch of men who were doing nothing but practicing their, you know, their peaceful ways, and they ended up getting drafted into the Marines. So to say that things like that don't happen, I mean, you know, a few good men, what, you know.
Right, code red.
Starts out with the Marine getting, you know, blown away for some reason by his own guys, so.
Well, yeah, and the blanket party and Full Metal Jacket.
Exactly. So to say that, you know, the Marine Corps didn't have a aspect of brutality to it, and, I guess that's the way they want them. I mean, you want your Marines, they want you broken down and be ready to charge a machine gun nest with a bayonet without question.
Right. Well, that's the unofficial motto. You know, the Rangers, you got to be real super special. The SEALs, you got to be real super special. Whatever the Air Force has, you got to be super special. The Marines have an unofficial motto: any mother's son will do.
Exactly. And just so it wasn't an accident. I think they're trying to teach him a lesson, and they let it go a little too far. And I'm thinking they thought they could bring the boy back after a while, and it just didn't happen. So, you know, to say that stuff like that happens every day, you know, they let that guy drown.
Yeah.
I've been around a pool too long, and there's just no way that was an accident.
Well, I can't. I've really, really turned it over a number of times in my head, Jethro. I can't come up with a manner, with a means in which this boy drowns with all these people standing around. And
right.
Frankly, you don't. If it was a simple case of an unavoidable accident, five Marines plus his drill instructor would not be on suspension at this moment.
Well, he had to have been struggling before he went under. Just to me, you know, they just went ahead and watched him struggle and let him go on down for a while. And they thought they'd teach him a big lesson and teach everybody else around there a lesson. But, yeah, like I said, it backfired. So, yeah. And they're going to whitewash that. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it will be. Like I said, those parents will never, never, never know the truth because this is not a truth-oriented government we have right now.
Right. It's just the madness. When does it stop?
It doesn't.
Well, the madness is going to stop with Joe Citizen, me and you, when the full effect of all these tax cuts and everything else come down. And, you know, we've got when the homeless rate doubles and the unemployment rate and everything. And it's madness. And now we're complaining about these, you know, wanting a decent wage for this construction job over there.
Oh, I know.
I mean, they want to talk family values and having the wife at home and raise your kids and have somebody there home for the kids. Well, that's what that $17 an hour for a laborer provides is the ability for you to raise your wife and kid without having everybody, you know, without having both parents at work all the time and the kid out running around unsupervised. You know, that's what that provides, but they don't want, you know, they say they're for family values, but then when the opportunity comes to provide that.
No, it's pure blue smoke and mirrors, Jethro. That's all that it is, because, you know, that rate, you know, Wayne's talked about the carpenter rig. It's $30 an hour, but he only gets 20 of that, and that's before taxes are taken out. You know, the other 10 goes to health care and pension.
Right. And I was trying to say on the morning show, you know, get yourself a carpenter or a plumber and a helper and see how much you pay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, you know, I can get one, you know, for a lot less than that. And I just said, well, name one. Of course. So, but, you know, the post office, or not the post office, but the big, that monstrosity of town, the federal building, you
right.
know, the prevailing federal wage is even higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who work there uptown, not that wage. So, I don't know. And this, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm bashing any priesthood or anything else, but, you know, they're supposed to be celibate, keeping away from sex, but, you know, the priests need to stay away from money and power grabbing, too.
Exactly. I mean, it affects the same center of the brain, doesn't it, Jethro?
Exactly.
And you know, you don't have to have coitus in order to be sexually stimulated, I don't think.
All right, and just because you go by the title of father, that has nothing to do with whether or not, you know, you're going to heaven or you're going to the other place.
No.
That's just a title, and it's a, I don't know. To me, that title has nothing but, you know, I give it nothing but contempt.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand why what happened in the French Revolution happened. You know, if people are abused by that portion of society, you can't expect anything else.
Right. And during the, when they were destroying the Inca and the Aztec civilization, you know, the Catholic priest would be there, you know, and they would.
Well, they were the ones who put the fire to the torches that burned them alive.
Right. And you would have a chance to convert to Christianity before they killed you. And if you didn't, they'd kill you. And if you did, you were converted, and then they'd kill you.
Right. It was the difference. If you converted, or if you confessed and converted before the execution, you were garroted to death. If you did not confess and convert, you were burned to death.
Yes, and that was all coming from the Catholic hierarchy. And they destroyed the entire culture, you know, in all the religious aspects, which were so far advanced of the European religions at that time.
Oh, I mean, and beyond that, their sciences were more advanced. There was literally a mountain of books written by the Mexica and the Tolteca and the on and on and on, literally a mountain of books to put Hitler to shame. And a priest walked up to it with a torch, and a thousand years of the culture gone.
Exactly, and I don't know. The priest is supposed to be, promote humanity and promote love and all this stuff, and then to turn around and expect somebody to come in and work for, I don't know what he's expecting, to pay, but. I don't know. If you're a priest, you belong in the church.
Exactly. You don't belong in the business sector.
You don't need to be out politicking and rubbing elbows and money touch you.
I know people who attended Wheeling Jesuit College at a time when he was the president up there, Jethro, and uniformly, all I get by talking to these folks is, look, he was a money-grubbing servant of mammon, and that's why he was president of Wheeling Jesuit.
Exactly. Well,
there was nothing inspiring, nothing religious, nothing. You certainly wouldn't go to the man for confession. And down here, what are you looking for? Desperation wages? You want me to send my kids to an educational the facility that's been built by people who are economically crippled? I don't think so. The thing's liable to collapse out from under them.
Exactly. And if you're getting paid a good wage, you're going to want to do a good job.
Exactly.
And people, I don't get this resistance to earning a good wage. I mean, most of these people out here talking against it, they're working class people too, and they're just right there drinking the Kool-Aid and going along with all this. And
well, Jethro, if labor consistently voted with the Republicans, you would hear nothing but pro-labor talk on the morning show. Okay. It's labor is a known democratic entity, and I don't care if they were giving out bars of gold to Republicans. They would still be hated because they will not support this hateful, warlike, vendetta-based agenda.
Right. And, well, and Senator Wicks, he's a working man.
Yeah.
He's, but you wouldn't know it from the way he's voting and stuff.
Well, you got to consider what kind of working man he is, Jethro. I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but this guy's a working man that's associated with Massey. And his family's associated with Massey, if I understand correctly.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the apple falleth not far from the tree.
Right. Well, there's something, there's a Joe McCarthyism about that, I mean, everything's wrong at Pinecrest, so the grand jury, has a special session just for you, and you say you're going to apologize if they don't find anything. They don't find anything, and then now the grand jury's suspect. They're wrongdoers.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you hit it right on the head, Jethro. It is McCarthy-esque because, we all well, not all of us, but, Joe McCarthy stood up there with a sheaf of blank paper in Wheeling, West Virginia, and said, I have here the names of known members of the Communist Party, and it was blank paper.
Right, and the damage he did far and wide.
Yeah, and
especially with government employees.
I'm guessing Senator Weeks minded as a one-termer, Jethro.
I guarantee it. I guarantee it because I liked him when he was running.
Mm-hmm.
But he is, all that good stuff he was talking when he was running, well, it seems to be coming out of both sides of his mouth now, and the fact remains that he is still barred, as far as I know.
Yeah, from Pinecrest.
From Pinecrest.
And then, the bill comes up, Jethro, about the bed and breakfast bill. And he votes against that. The vote was, 33-1 or something, and he was the lone dissenting voice because he said, you need to be able, listen to the reasoning, you need to be able to smoke in a bed and breakfast.
Yep.
Senator Weeks wants people smoking in bed? I mean, damn.
He's always voting against everything, and then he comes up with these obscure reasoning, to make it try to look good.
Oh, I know. It's woo. That's your line. It's madness, man. Nothing but madness.
Right. So, yeah, with the gas price go, I mean, if it does go up 24 cents like they're saying, that's going to put a hurt on a lot of people, including computer man Chris. I don't know if he calls in the show much, but he's on the he's on the board. So, and he was saying if it went up past, what it was today, I guess, which he talked about a couple of months ago when it was at the same price.
Well, I'm not rolling in money or anything, Jethro, by any stretch of the imagination, but it's going to hurt me because I make a long drive every day.
Right. Well, and some people were talking about, I think Gary was mentioning public transportation and Beckley and stuff. If it does go up 24 cents, that's going to start looking a lot better.
Yeah.
And just like Gary, I do remember the Questonbury bus lines. My uncle used to be a driver on that and stuff. And they seem to do good business, but I don't know, the uptown is there's nothing there now.
No, there's nowhere to go to.
And the somebody was talking about using that trail that they've got for transportation, but that doesn't go anywhere either.
Well, it takes you a few places, but by and large, no. I mean, it runs through a fairly isolated area. You're absolutely right. It's a war on us, Jethro.
Yes, it is, and we're going to pay, and people don't realize what the full extent of these tax cuts are going to be until the buck stops with them and they're hurting, or a family member or something. Then then that's when the big darkness is here, and the weeping and gnashing of teeth. But the only silver lining that I can see in that dark cloud is, there will never be another Republican voted for 50 years.
I hope you are right. I hope you're right. I don't know, though. I mean, we got 2 years or less than 2 years to get rid of, for the people in the second district, to get rid of Shelley Moore. She's proven herself to be nothing but pure poison. We'll have to mount another, Congressman Ray Hall will have to mount another vigorous campaign, because I'm sure some, weirdo right winger will come out of the belfry where he lives with the bats to run against him.
Snuffer might be trying to run against him. He was on the, morning show last week or something, still talking the same lies about Ray Hall, trying to say Ray Hall's, got a residence over in the Middle East and.
Oh, you're kidding.
Well, just saying, he's been over there the last 15 years, like he's spending the majority of his time over in the Middle East and stuff, which is not the case.
No, it's not. And I still admire the man for trying to go over there and save what are now 1,500 American lives lost and 30,000 maimed and wounded. It's looking like a pretty admirable stance he took before the war, Jethro.
Yeah, Byrd and Ray Hall both, those are those lone voices crying out in the wilderness. But then you've got these half-wits who want to put them down and give Ray Hall and Byrd no credit whatsoever and say we need to get rid of them.
And yet I had the press release yesterday, here's another umpty $1,000 coming right here to southern West Virginia for roads, for uptown Beckley, for rejuvenation. And, I could spend 3 hours of every show for an entire week talking nothing but that, and somebody some wingnut would inevitably call and say, yeah, but what's he done for me?
Right. Yeah. They want to bring up the KKK and stuff like that. Well, he's done a lot of stuff for everybody. Just because it didn't land a $100 bill in your own pocket, the infrastructure around this area, he's done a lot. If you took away everything that Byrd has brought into the state, we would be in terrible, terrible shape.
Well, Senator Byrd secured the grant that is going to build this educational annex, Jethro.
Not getting the credit for it, though, is he?
Oh, No. Why would you do? Why would you do that? We're willing to enter into 3 hours of argument as to why the people building it should have to do it on starvation wages. And we'll talk about what a fabulous thing it'll be if only it can be built on starvation wages. But nobody seems to mention the fact that this was, this was Byrd's doing.
Right. And then Union Wayne gets on and tries to, he's for the working man, the common man, which is what just most of the people in the United States are, common working people who want the best for them, for their kids. And they want a comfortable place to live and to live without fear.
Yeah.
But fear.
And then he gets attacked. You know, right. when in fact he's the best, the people that are attacking him, he's probably the best friend that most of them would ever have if the, you know, if they get into a workplace situation where they need some help.
Right, and on the list, you know, they're calling him the thug and trying to put him down and calling him every derogatory name that they can think of, and that's, you know, he's working for them.
Yeah, I know. You know, and you know, it's the same way with organized labor. The people who brought you the weekend, the people who brought you the 40-hour week, the people who brought you overtime. Unemployment insurance, workers' comp, and you know these good for nothing punk Rethuglicans have nothing more to do than to goon on the very people who makes their life possible.
Right, and that's just part of the dumbing down of America. You know, there's people who have no historical knowledge, and I think I can think of one in particular who calls the show all the time and thinks he knows history and doesn't know a thing about it. And if they would go back and read some history and look at the reason why unions, you know, were brought forth to begin with.
Yeah, and that reminds me of something. I'm going to try to make contact. You're familiar with the Wobblies, right, Jethro?
Wobblies.
The industrial workers of the world. They were suppressed around the First World War, believed in one big union. I didn't even know they still existed.
Huh.
But our good friend Ben Birch out at WhiteRoseSociety.org alerted me to the fact that they do, and he suggested maybe I try to get their president on, and by golly, I'm going to do it.
All right, but you know, but the American public has been conditioned, you know, all you got to do is say socialism or communism, and put that label on something that's good for the people, and they'll turn against it.
Oh yeah, they'll kill anything that moves, and that's eventually what's going to happen with Social Security. George Bush is eventually going to come out and call it a dirty communist scheme, because that's what he called it in 1978 when he was telling people Social Security will be broke in 10 years. That was 1978, and he still hasn't gotten off that tired old song.
Right. But and these fear tactics that they're using, you know, this so-called, I'm changing the subject now, but this so-called intercepted message.
Oh, yeah.
From Bin Laden last week. You know, they can intercept that, but they can't pinpoint where it's coming from or... You know, and they know it's, you know, how do they know it's Zarqawi, and how do they know it's Bin Laden? You know, that stuff, that was made up.
Sure
it was. I can almost guarantee that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have no doubt of that whatsoever. Meanwhile, like Chris calls in and tells us about this listening station in the Eastern Panhandle that's now geared up to listen to cell phone calls and internet traffic and telephone calls. You know, we're the ordinary people have become the enemy. Wayne's right. George Orwell was 20 years too early.
Yeah, and they're missing the terrorists. So they're going to concentrate on us, you know,
well,
the citizenry.
To entrenched Republican power, Jethro, we are the terrorists. They go to sleep every night scared to death of us because we might wise up and throw their sorry rear ends out of office one of these days.
Well, so when they get us where they want us, you know, when we're out standing in front of the house, you know, with a begging bowl, hoping they'll come by and throw a few shekels and a, you know, a crust of bread for us and a little gruel, you know, handout, just begging for the, you know, the mighty Republicans to just, you know, give us a taste of the good life.
Yeah, straight out of David Copperfield. Yeah. More, please.
More?
You want more? Hey, Jethro, we got to hit the break. Man, it's so good to hear from you. It seems like it's been forever.
Right. Hey, we'll have to get together there and get down the river this summer.
I'll work on my courage.
Okay. I think your son's probably old enough to try a little jumping, too, there.
Bob, you know, and he'd do it.
Oh, yeah.
He'd do it yesterday.
Good.
All right, Jethro, take care. Good hearing from you.
Good to hear from you, too, Bob.
Later.
Hey, everybody.
All right. It's madness, I tell you. Big darkness soon come. That's not a joke. Big darkness soon come. But what comes sooner is a news update from Carl Mack and a little of this, a little of that after that, and then we'll get back to your phone calls and various and sundry other methods and merriment. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
We'll be right back.
Good evening. This is Carl Mack, WWNR News. The hearing on a controversial annexation by the town of Mabscott has been postponed for another week. The town wants to annex a portion of Bird Drive going through MacArthur and Crab Orchard into city limits. The Raleigh County Commission has refused to approve the annexation, saying maps and petitions the town presented were faulty. Both sides were scheduled to argue their case before Circuit Judge H.L. Kirkpatrick this morning, but Commission Attorney Carl Roop says a dispute has arisen over a map that Mabscott has presented. Roop says a map the commission has shows a potential overlap of the annexation area into the town of Sophia, and both sides have agreed to continue the trial to study the matter.
First thing we're going to do is allow the town of Mabscott surveyor to go back out, have time to let him replot his map. And then we'll get together, the council will, for each of the parties, and look at the map. And if there is an overlap of even one inch, then obviously the case will be thrown out or dismissed.
The town of Mabscott wants the court to force the commission to approve the annexation, saying state law does not give them the authority to refuse. The hearing will be held sometime next week on a day to be determined. The Mountain State University basketball team has a new member. He's Governor Joe Manchin, made an honorary Cougar Thursday during a ceremony celebrating the team's 2004 NAIA National Championship. The governor, a former quarterback for the WVU football team, was presented an MSU jersey with his name on it. In a keynote address for West Virginia Women's Day at the legislature today, First Lady Gail Manchin emphasized the importance of the five promises she and her husband have made for the state's children. The five promises include providing a caring adult, a safe place, a healthy start, a chance to learn, marketable skills, and an opportunity to give back. That's the news. Here's the forecast for tonight. Showers, snow showers, both likely tonight, mid-30s. Tomorrow, showers likely and warmer. High near 40. Tomorrow night, a chance of showers. And for Sunday, partly cloudy with a high near 35. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
That kicked his implants and hangs on the rim, and the Cougars are on a roll. His sixth three-pointer of the game, and this one from 11 feet down the arc.
This is our town. This is our team. It's Mountain State University Cougar basketball, and you can follow all the 105.
Dietary supplements may reduce the risk of coronary heart disease. Unfortunately, this health claim shows scientific evidence that is suggestive, but not conclusive. If you decide to take these supplements, keep in mind that taking omega-3 fatty acids should be done in moderation. The FDA recommends not exceeding 2 grams daily. There's also no concrete proof that omega-3 fatty acids that are found in canola, rapeseed, soy, flax, and evening primrose oil have any effect in reducing the risk of coronary heart disease. One of the best ways to stay healthy is to exercise regularly and eat at least 5 servings of fruits and veggies a day. Have regular checkups with your doctor, and be sure to discuss any supplement programs you're considering taking before you take them. I'm Phil Lempert, Shopping Smart.
Ruled Macedonia at age 16. Toppled the Persian dynasty at 25. At 31, created the greatest empire known to man. There's a reason they didn't call him Alexander, the Spineless. Alexander the Great, a great warrior, an even greater story. Film on location this Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, as only the History Channel can bring you.
With all the recent news about prescription medications, a lot of my friends are concerned about what to take for arthritis pain. I'm not. I'm doing what my doctor told me to do years ago. Take Aleve. He said the active ingredient in Aleve has been trusted by doctors for all-day relief for nearly 30 years. Aleve really works, but don't take my word for it. Ask your doctor if Aleve is right for you.
Aleve, prescription strength relief without a prescription. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain.
Welcome to the John Deere Lawn Care Show, Green and Growing. Today we're here with Bill Clutho, John Deere's groundskeeping guru. Bill, I am so ready for spring. I'm already thinking about new equipment. When will my local dealer replace snow blowers with string trimmers?
Probably already has. Manufacturers typically introduce new products in the fall, and they start arriving in dealer showrooms in early winter. So take advantage. Go check out the newest technology and designs.
Good idea. I've had my eye on this new lawnmower.
Well, before you blindly follow that eye, make sure it's a match for your lawn's size and contour. For lawns less than a third of an acre, a walk-behind mower can get the job done in about an hour. If you've got more than a half acre, though, a riding lawnmower or lawn tractor is the way to go. And when you go to the dealership, don't be afraid to ask questions.
How about color?
I always like green myself.
I bet you do, Bill.
Matches my lawn, you know.
Mm-hmm. Tune in again for Green and Growing.
A man who just loves conservatives. Baked, boiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. The boy is getting ever better at this producing business. It's about 21 minutes before 10 o'clock. Friday night rolls on. Time to start getting a little bit sad, facing a weekend. Hopefully we'll have some decent weather and we'll go out and have some sort of fun, but I'm going to be lost at, 7 o'clock. I'm sorry. I'm just that way. Now, I mentioned this one story. I pulled it off the wires at the top of the hour. I mentioned it talking to Jethro. This is like the poster child story for why Iraq is so monstrously screwed up. No, we don't make bubbles in the hot chocolate, son. I remember what it was like to be nine. From the Associated Press, American troops fired on a car rushing Italian journalist Giuliana Screna to freedom on Friday after a month in captivity, killing the Italian intelligence officer who helped negotiate her release and wounding the reporter in another friendly fire tragedy at a U.S. checkpoint. Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, a real pal of George Bush, who's kept Italian troops in Iraq even though the Italians, knowing that it is an unjust and monstrous war, have demanded that he remove them, demanded an explanation, quote, for such a serious incident for which someone must take the responsibility. Silvio. Man, Silvio, you're a pal of the Bush administration. Who's going to take responsibility, huh? That's not their job. They don't take responsibility. Now, what's going to happen is some poor soul whose tour in Iraq has been extended and extended and extended because the military can't meet its recruiting goals, that person will wind up taking responsibility. Not the person who started the war on lies, no one in the administration who told the lies, but some poor man or woman who only wants to get home to their family and their children, they're going to get drilled for this. The U.S. military said the car was speeding. I should hope so. You're trying to get this woman who has been in captivity for a month back to safety as quickly as possible before some other god-awful thing can happen to her, and lo and behold, some other god-awful thing happens to her at the hands of us, the U.S. The car was speeding as it approached a coalition checkpoint in western Baghdad at 8:55 p.m. The military said soldiers shot into the engine block only after trying to warn the driver to stop by hand and arm signals, flashing white lights, and firing warning shots. I think maybe one of those shots through the engine block might have gone through the Italian intelligence agency. The American said two people were wounded, but Berlusconi said there were three, Screna and two intelligence officers. One of the officers was in serious condition with an apparent lung injury. According to the APCOM news agency in Italy, the U.S. military said army medics treated a wounded man, but that he refused medical evacuation for further assistance. The intelligence agent was killed when he threw himself over Screna to protect her from U.S. fire. Dear heavens, what a monstrous screw-up. We can at least say the name of the dead intelligence officer and recognize him for his heroism, Nicola Calipari. He was in the forefront of the negotiations with the kidnappers that let Ms. Screna go. Ms. Screna was taken to an American military hospital where shrapnel. shrapnel was removed from her left shoulder. Shrapnel? Shrapnel. What, are we got shrapnel bullets now? Maybe they mean little piece of a full metal jacketed bullet. I don't. That's enough to just make you stop in your tracks and sort of... How much more proof do we need that this is a monstrous nightmare from which we must forcibly awaken ourselves? You've had those kind of nightmares, haven't you? The ones that are so horrible, you know, you try to scream in your, you're trying to scream in your dream and your body won't let you scream. And some corner of your brain knows that it's a nightmare and you keep saying, I gotta wake up, I gotta wake up, I gotta wake up. You see, there is a segment of the American population that keeps trying to tell the rest of you, we've got to wake up, we've got to wake up, we've got to wake up. And yet George Bush comes out and says, freedom's on the march! And we don't wake up. And we don't wake up. And we don't wake up. Interesting article out of the New York Times. March 4th, 2005. Today, you know. Headline, Army officials voice concern over shortfall in recruitment. Recruiting is down by some 27% for the month of February among the Army. It's down by some 6-7% among the Marines because they don't have to recruit nearly as many human beings. The Army is so short of new recruits that for the first time in nearly 5 years, it failed in February to fill its monthly quota of volunteers sent to boot camp. Army officials called it the latest ominous sign of the Iraq War's impact on the military's ability to enlist fresh meat, or troops, sorry. Army Secretary Francis J. Harvey told the Senate Armed Services Committee yesterday, he said, we're very concerned about it. When people ask you what you worry about the most, I say there's just two words, people and money. And there's that word again, money. So we're not getting enough soldiers. Kind of cold in here. I think I feel a draft. Army officials insisted on Thursday that increased recruiting efforts, including hundreds of additional recruiters and re-enlistment bonuses of up to $20,000, would help the Army meet its overall annual recruiting targets. Fancy language for, we think if we throw enough money at them, they'll forget it's their blood, that their blood and their meat and their bones and their sinew and their gristle and their guts that we want. Because we have a hungry meat grinder in Iraq. And there's not enough meat going into the grinder. Meanwhile, top Pentagon officials acknowledged that the graphic images of casualties from Iraq and the obvious danger of serving there had caused many parents to advise their children to avoid joining the military now. Lawrence Derrida, whom I am absolutely convinced must be related to the last stooge, Curly Joe. Remember Curly Joe of the Three Stooges, the really unfunny stooge? His name was Joe Derrida. Lawrence Derrida said, speaking about the idea of parents advising their children to avoid joining the military now, Lawrence Derrida said, woo, that's a factor that we're a nation at war. If it's a young kid who's in high school and contemplating his future, what are his parents advising him? Well, I'll tell you what his parents are advising him, because even at the tender age of, 9 and 10 and 17, as a parent, my lovely wife and I are advising, stay as far away from the military as you possibly can because they mean you no good ends. And in fact, we've got a neighbor who's a member of the military who, God be praised, came home safe and sound from Iraq and said, you stay out of the military. You don't have anything to do with the military. You don't want it. You don't need it. You know, parents advising their children to avoid joining the military now. What are the parents advising them? The parents are advising the children that they would like to go on knowing them and loving them and not to replace them with this really cute triangle-shaped flag with nothing but stars showing that they can put on the mantel place in place of where the human being used to be. But here's the quote of the day. Here's the quote of the day from
what is apparently the grandson of Curly Joe. Lawrence DeRita added, whoop, 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 whoop. Quote, I mean, without question, when there's the kind of coverage that there's been about casualties, by the way, we certainly, this is a quote, about casualties, and we certainly mourn all the casualties. Isn't it pitiful that he has to? We certainly mourn all the casualties, but they are covered. There's prominent media coverage of casualties in Iraq. Parents factor those kinds of things into what they want their children doing. Did you catch what Curly Joe DeRita said? When there's the kind of coverage that there has been about casualties. My God in his heaven. We are not even allowed to see the coffins coming home. And Curly Joe DeRita is blaming the media. At one single point, on one single issue, will these bloodthirsty punks please take personal responsibility like they say the Republicans are so damned good at? Please! It's not much to ask. It's the media's fault that Army recruiting is down. But every time you turn on the television, there's a, you know, be an Army of One or a the whatever, you know, be a Marine and climb a big rock and fight a Dungeons and Dragon critter in your dress blues. But it's the media's fault. You know, the media that covers all those funerals. The media that's right there at Dover Air Force Base every time a coffin comes home on a C-130. Not. But it's the media's fault. It's not George Bush's fault. No, no, no. He didn't take a military and absolutely wreck it. God knows Don Rumsfeld, you know, the guy that was sandbagged, who was sabotaged, who was bushwhacked by that nasty, nasty National Guard sergeant from Chattanooga who asked him about up-armoring the Humvees. It's not Don Rumsfeld's fault. No, no, no. And it's not Paul Wolfowitz's fault. And it has nothing to do with the fact that wounded reservists and National Guardsmen are coming home and losing health care for their injuries. No, none of that has anything to do with it. It's because there's, quote, prominent media coverage of casualties in Iraq. Bug spray. These guys, you know, they joke and they call us the reality-based community. You reality-based people. I am, we are, we're kind of proud of it, I am. But what does that say? That these guys are the fantasy-based people. These guys have no idea what the real world is about. You know, and it certainly never occurred to this bloodthirsty, repiglican monster, the Curly Larry DeRita, that parents might be advising their kids not to join the military because it's an evil war and they have worked hard to raise good children and they don't want them participating in evil. Oh, no. That's impossible. It couldn't possibly be that. And we talk about, you know, injured veterans coming back and not having the health care that they need. That's not a joke. That's very, very real. And I guess this is more liberal media, even if it does come from Stars and Stripes. Petty Officer Anthony Cuomo believes if he were an active duty sailor, the Navy would have already taken care of the shoulder injury he suffered in Iraq. But instead, the reservist who joined after serving as a New York City firefighter during the September 11th attacks, said he has undergone 21 months of confusion over his military status and rights and is still waiting for additional surgeries to repair torn muscles. He testified before a congressional panel on Wednesday. investigating the treatment of wounded troops, and he said, in my mind, there is one word for this, discrimination. And before you say, well, you know, he's just a gold bricker, he's just a bellyacher, step back for a minute, sunshine, because you know what? Top military officials acknowledged at the hearing that such health care inconsistencies do exist. And it goes on and on. Chief Warrant Officer Stephen Keaton said after initially receiving exemplary treatment overseas for his injuries, he returned home to find discrepancies in how reservists were handled. I was really dismayed when an Army chaplain boarded our bus full of wounded troops and began to ask if we were reserve or active duty. If it was guard or reserve, he passed them up, and if it was an active duty member, he began to talk with them. Lord God. Is this bothersome at all to you? Is this troubling? Is one soldier as good as the next, or is this some sort of brand new discrimination? And by the way, just in case you're curious, there's a new wound that's been identified among those coming home from Iraq. Out of USA Today, a growing number of U.S. troops whose body armor helped them survive bomb and rocket attacks are suffering brain damage. TBI, traumatic brain injury, as a result of the blasts. Some military doctors say it's become the signature wound of the war. It's the same thing as what happens to little children in shaken baby syndrome. The concussion is so strong that it literally destroys parts of your brain, shakes them into jello. And guess what? If you're a guardsman or a reservist whose brain has been shaken into jello, too bad, sweetheart. Because the chaplain will come down to the bus full of injured troops and he'll say, guard, reserve, active duty, come with me, you get treatment. But it's all okay, isn't it? It's all okay because out of sight, out of mind, as long as you've got that little yellow ribbon magnet on the back of your car, you think you've done your part. You haven't. You haven't until you forswear these warmongering, bloodthirsty Republican monsters. That's the long and the short of it. Not to mention the end of it. That's it for tonight. Thanks to everybody who participated. Thanks to all the callers. We'll be back Monday night, 7 o'clock. This sure is enjoyable. I love doing this. I love sharing this information with you. I love talking with you about it. I'm going to miss you for the next couple of days. The show, of course, tonight was produced by the lovely and talented Taylor Sky, assisted by my son, I might add. Wave to the radio, boy. Say goodnight.
Goodnight.
See? I'm not kidding. The show was engineered by Randy Kerbway and announced at least in part by Brian Reznor and brought to you as ever by the 20,000 workers of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you are working in West Virginia, indeed, they are working for you. Also brought to you by our very good friends at the West Virginia Pipe Trades. Remember them when you enjoy working plumbing or welds that hold or sprinklers that sprinkle when they're supposed to. Remember them. The show is archived at whiterosesociety.org, and we are very grateful to Ben Birch for doing that. Time to roll. Hey, Agnes.